All right.
Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. Huh. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight.
All right, all right, all right. Nick DeGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, and we're here until 5 a.m. every weeknight, every weekday morning from 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude. Here on WGN, we're here till 5. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5 o'clock. The great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Thursday. That means Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. It's one artist, three songs. You pick the bumps. We have a theme. And today is Triple Play Thursday. One artist, three songs. Get them in now at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. All right. Coming up on the show this morning, it's time for our biweekly visit with Dan Feinberg, one of our favorite guests. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Lots of TV to talk about. We want to get his thoughts on a bunch of new shows and some of the the finales that have taken place over the past couple of weeks, and we'll get Dan's thoughts on that as we visit with him every couple of weeks. He's terrific, and so we always love when Dan is on the show. So we'll talk TV with him, and then we're going to continue talking TV later on. Some of the topics include we have some shows here. You know, obviously everybody knows that the Deadwood movie was shown this past Friday night. And, you know, we waited years and years for some closure for that. And so they had a 2-hour movie, which was great. The Deadwood movie was fantastic. And it was really satisfying. And it was really, after all of these years, so great to get back to Deadwood and get back to these characters and have some closure. So we've got other shows that deserve a Deadwood-like movie for closure. So we're going to talk a little bit about those. And we want to hear from you guys. What shows left you completely unsatisfied, and we really need to have like a 2-hour movie to sum it all up so that we get some closure. So shows that deserve a Deadwood-style movie, it's just so we can move on with our lives. And then we have some short-lived and easily forgotten 1980s TV series that we're going to talk about, have some fun with that. And if you remember any ridiculous, goofy shows from the 80s, because the 80s was a goofy decade, we will get into that. And then if we have time, we'll get into the best TV pilots of all time. So lots of TV stuff we're going to talk about this morning. We'll start it off with Dan Feinberg from The Hollywood Reporter. And again, you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. So there you go. All right, let's say hello to the crew here in producing the show this morning. Of course, is Tom Hush. Tom, how are you?
I'm good, Nick. How are you?
I'm all right, man. I was very pleased with the Cubs last night for a while.
Bodie,
yeah,
what a guy.
What an unbelievable man. Bodie, he's not even David Bodie had a career night last night. And thank God he did, because you know the bullpen gave up a 5-run lead, and the bullpen gave that up, and then so they needed the insurance run, and of course Bodie came through again, and he was 4-for-4 with 7 RBIs. 4-for-4 with 7 RBIs. He was a triple shy of hitting for the cycle, too. I was really hoping he would stretch that last hit into a triple. But Bodie had a career night, and it was great to see him. And here's an amazing thing. You know, Bodie is not an everyday, not an everyday player. Doesn't play every day. After his performance last night, he is now just below Rogers Hornsby as having the most RBIs for a Cubs second baseman in a single game. So it, and the list goes, he goes, Hornsby had eight RBIs in one game. So it goes Rogers Hornsby, then David Bodie, Rogers Hornsby, Ryan Sandberg. That's the he's just made that list. David Bodie has made that list. It was a spectacular night. Not a spectacular night for the bullpen, especially Brock. But we did get Kimbrel. Apparently the Cubs signed Craig Kimbrel, who is a killer closer from the Boston Red Sox and can only help the bullpen in this situation. But he won't be available for a while. So they did close the deal. It seems like they closed the deal. So we're going to have a real closer, evidently. So that's exciting. So let's go to the newsroom. It's Vic Vaughn. Hi, Vic.
Morning, Nick.
How are you, man?
I'm all right. How you doing?
I'm okay. Did you get to see any of the game?
I slept.
You slept?
Yeah, it's right during my sleep cycle.
Well, it was an exciting night for David Bodie. I mean, just like really historical and crazy.
I'm catching up on all the details now. He had a big night.
Big night. Seven RBIs, man.
Loaded.
Yeah, 4 for 4, 7 RBIs.
He's great, man.
David
Bodie is great.
I don't know if, it's going to be interesting to see if he plays today. You know, they play in like 12 hours. That's a very quick turnaround.
I'm going to try to watch it.
Yeah.
I always fall asleep halfway through the game,
yeah.
But I'm going to try.
The afternoon games are tough for me because I usually am asleep. But I would like to, because the Rockies are a really good team, especially offensively. But of course, they do. Their home stadium has no atmosphere, so you can hit a home run every 5 seconds.
That's a good point.
The ball sails 9 miles when you when you hit it. But they do have a great offensive team, and they kept coming back last night. Man, they made it a game. Yeah. The Cubs were up 8-3 at one point.
Yeah, their stadium is pretty cool too. Is it?
I've never been.
It's kind of in a way. I don't want to get a lot of hate mail. It's not the same as Wrigley Field. Wrigley Field is just smack dab in the middle of a neighborhood, but it's similar. It's kind of like that. There's a neighborhood around it, you know, and it's pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, it looks great when I watch it on TV. It looks like a very, very, very cool
And they've really done that whole area up quite a bit, too, in Denver.
That's
cool.
It's
nice.
That's cool. I've been to a bunch of baseball stadiums about 20 years ago, about 25 years ago. My buddies and I rented a van, and we went on a baseball trip. And
that sounds fun.
We went to the East Coast. We rented a van, went to the East Coast. We stopped at Cleveland, but this was before Jake was built. This was when they had Municipal Stadium. And it was both the Browns and the Indians played there. So we went there. And then we went to, we went into New York and Baltimore. And it was the first year of Camden Yards. It was the very first year that Camden Yards opened. That's a beautiful park.
Oh.
That's a beautiful
park. Now, were you following Cubs teams, or were you just
It was weird because we scheduled it all out, and we're all National League guys by far, and we went to nothing but American League games because that's how it worked out schedule wise, you know. But so we went to there, and then we ended up going to the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, and we went to the old Yankee Stadium, which was magnificent, and then we went to Fenway, and then on the way back. We stopped off to get some gas and stuff, and we stopped off, and somebody got like baseball news and said, "Hey, look, on the way home, man, Cleveland's playing. We got to know guess who's pitching for the opposing team?" We go, "Who?" Nolan Ryan. So we broke every speed limit to go back to Cleveland, catch a game on the way home, just so we can see Nolan Ryan pitch, and he got shelled. he got shelled. He gave up 7 runs like in 2 innings.
More of that.
So, but it was great though, and it was a great trip, and I love visiting other ballparks, man. I think it's a lot of fun. So, but yeah. Well, anyway, Cubs, great game for the Cubs tonight. Big game for Bodie. They won 3 in a row, and they could sweep tomorrow or today. Sorry, in 12 hours actually. So there you go. Okay, listen, lots of TV to talk about tonight. We got TV topics that we're going to get to after we talk to Dan, but Dan Feinberg is going to join us from The Hollywood Reporter. And again, you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, FIEN. Tons of TV to talk about, as there is every couple of weeks when we talk to Dan, and we're going to do that right after we take this break.
TV party tonight! We're going to have a TV party tonight! All right! We're going to have a TV party, all right!
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. And it is Thursday, so Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs. And there you go. We're going to talk TV here in just a couple of seconds with Dan Feinberg. And then we're also going to talk TV after Dan. We're going to talk about shows that deserve a Deadwood-style movie for closure. We're going to talk about short-lived and easily forgotten 1980s TV series. And more TV talk. We figured we'd kick it off with our biweekly visit with Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we talk every couple of weeks about TV. Always a lot of TV to talk about. 312-981-7200. Phone number for Triple Play Thursday requests and talk and text. And there you go. Let's welcome Dan Feinberg to the show. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you, Nick.
How are you?
Oh, busy.
Okay.
Busy.
Now, the last time we spoke, you gave us your review of Deadwood. But I hadn't seen it yet.
So what'd you think?
Oh, man. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I thought it was like great closure. I mean, you know, it had a real emotional heft to it, considering, you know, the arc that Swearengen has in it and what's really happening with David Milch, you know, in real life. So there was a real added emotion to watching it. I didn't know I was going to cry, but I did. and it was just so great to be back in that world and to reunite with so many of the characters that they brought back. It was so lovely to see all those actors and actresses come back. Robin Wykert she's got to be nominated for an Emmy for that performance, right?
I'm going to be really interested to see how any voters treat the movie in general, because the movie miniseries categories in general are, I would say, far tougher this year than the drama categories, to be sure, and a lot of them overlap in terms of movie miniseries acting.
Yeah.
And I just don't know where there's room. Like, I would hate to, for example, not have Ian McShane nominated.
Yeah.
You know, if he misses out, that would make me sad on several levels, not only because he simply didn't get enough recognition in general for that show. You know, he didn't win any Emmys. He won a Golden Globe. He did win a TCA award and sent us TCA members' Christmas cards for a couple of years. That was very, very nice.
That's nice.
he seemed like a good guy, and somewhere in a box somewhere I have two very nice Christmas cards from Ian McShane.
Oh,
so,
very cool.
I hope he gets a nomination. But from there, though, you know, you can't nominate everyone. So if you were to say Robin Wygert, I would say sure, but wouldn't you maybe rather nominate Paula Malcolmson?
Yeah, she
would. You know, you just can't have them all, and that's the tough thing with these categories.
Yeah. Well, I didn't even DVR it. It was Friday night, 7 o'clock. Right soon as it started, I was giddy. And within 10 minutes, I was just so happy to be back into that, you know, profanity-laced language and just the beauty of it. And it was just, and all the characters that were coming back, it just felt like I was putting on a warm coat. You know what I mean? It was just great. And I loved it. And I thought it brought great closure. It was exactly, you know, 10 years in 10 years of waiting. And it was really, really incredibly satisfying. And I really couldn't have been happier. Yeah.
I don't think I loved it as much as some people did, but I think without any question, I don't see how they could have done better with it. Like, in terms of how it left these viewers, including yourself, including myself, who have been on hold basically for 13 years, I don't think they could have more gracefully brought viewers to a satisfying closing place. And so I admire what they did. I think it was a difficult task. It would have been so easy for us to have all come away going, "Ah, man, it sounds like sort of a cover artist doing his version of Milch." But no. It sounded like Milch.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's funny that you said it was like a cover artist doing Milch. That's what the new De Palma movie is. It's like a bad cover De Palma. This terrible movie called Domino and I happen to be sort of a ridiculous Brian De Palma fan. I mean, I think Raising Kane's a masterpiece. That's how much I love Brian De Palma. But I couldn't even, I mean, I could barely get through. I watched the whole thing, but it was horrible. It was just so clearly De Palma just going through the motions and not caring. And that's exactly the opposite of what this Deadwood is.
Yeah, I will not be seeing Domino probably because it does look kind of like imitation De Palma, except by a real De Palma, and that's very sad. But I don't remember the last De Palma movie that I thought felt like genuine De Palma.
The last one for me, I hated the one before this. That's Passion. I hated that. The last one that I really loved that he made was Redacted. Which of course he made already because he already made Casualties of War, and it's pretty much the same. It's the same movie, but in a different style. And so Redacted was the last really good De Palma movie. But so
hey, that's not even that long. I think some people would probably take you back even further.
I know.
I am a large De Palma fan, but
it is ridiculous what an apologist I am for Brian De Palma. I will go to bat for him. I liked Wise Guys. That's how much I like Brian De Palma. So,
okay, that's tough. And I, for example, would, under the right circumstances, I would probably defend really random things like Black Dahlia if you caught me at the right moment. Not like passionately, but I think I would probably defend it.
I like Black Dahlia. And I'll tell you something else, Dan. I don't hate Bonfire of the Vanities.
Bonfire of the Vanities is just... It's the casting decisions top to bottom that are so very wrong, but there are every once in a while moments that are technically so stunning and where the production design is remarkable and where the camera fluidity is remarkable, but oh my God, everyone is horribly miscast in that movie top to bottom.
Yeah, but that movie gets a pass just for the opening shot. That's enough for me.
There are a few things. I feel like someone just signed on a couple of years ago to do a TV version, and I really do feel like it's probably time for a TV version of Bonfire of the Vanities to do it. It's a 6-hour or 10-hour miniseries, and I would like to see it done well.
Yeah,
but because it's a great book.
Yes, it is. Dan, tell me about the TCA Award nominations. When does that happen?
We just sent out our ballots today. So let's see. The ballots go out today. The ballots are out for a week. Then the nominations come out. So I think the next time we talk, we will be able to talk about the nominees, I think. So today they went around, and all of my colleagues were on Twitter trying to figure out what shows they were trying to remember from last June and July. And so that's things like Succession. I will keep saying over and over again, I hope people nominate Succession. I hope that America to Me is remembered. I think there are a lot of great things that aired in last June and last July that I hope don't get forgotten. But as I was going through my ballot, and I mentioned this earlier, the drama categories are really thin, and in some cases, embarrassingly so, and the comedy categories are stacked to the gills, and there will be remarkable comedies that are not going to get nominated for anything, and I am already upset on behalf of several of my favorite shows.
You know, I can't believe, has it been a year since Nanette?
It has. Nanette was last June, and I suspect people are gonna forget about it.
No.
I'm talking voters. I'm not talking to people who love it. But it's also a tough show to categorize. I did write in Hannah Gadsby for individual achievement in comedy, and even that, though, was tough because there are so many great shows and so many great comedies and so many great comedies that are from people who star in created, write, and often direct their comedies. And so there are just these titanic comic achievements this year, whether it's Russian Doll, whether it's the remarkable Fleabag, whether it's Rami on Hulu. You know, a lot of these shows just aren't going to get nominations, and that makes me pretty sad. But I will get more realistically sad when I actually see what the voting totals look like.
And it should be in the next couple of weeks. We should be able to talk a little bit about the nominees then at that time.
Yeah, I think by the next time we talk, the nominations will have been announced, and probably the voting will be in. But I will not be able to give you even a wink or a nudge of a hint.
Okay. All right. Okay. So have you seen any of the new season of Baskets?
I have not gotten to it yet because there is so much, and some of the stuff is great and some of the stuff is horrible, but, you know, Baskets Mascots is a solid week away, and goodness, there are like 17 shows premiering between now and then. So who's got time? But
yeah,
we'll definitely, next time we talk, be able to talk about the first couple Baskets episodes.
Yeah, and then that'll be our bi-weekly talk of Baskets.
Our listeners are looking forward to it.
Yes,
no doubt.
They are. What are the other ones that are premiering between now and next week? What are some of the premieres?
There are so many things. For example, there is this Sunday, the return of Big Little Lies.
Yes, which we'll get your review on that after we break here. But what else?
Yeah, there are lots of things like that. There's Baskets. There's a new season of Pose. It's a busy, busy week. And then the second half of the month is a lot slower. So for whatever reason, these first couple weeks of June are crazy. And then I don't want to say it's slow in the second half of June, because this just never slows down, Nick. Yeah. But it's a tiny bit slower.
Okay. All right. So you'll be able to get to Baskets at that point. So
someday, yes.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, I love that show, and I'm very excited about it and that it's coming back. And so I can have actually something. Speaking of FX, real quick, did you see the finale of What We Do in the Shadows?
I saw the finale of What We Do in the Shadows and the finale of Fosse Verdon, which were both.
Oh yeah, we haven't talked about the finale. Oh, we're going to talk. Well, let's break, because then we have a little. we have our biweekly FX channel to talk about. So Dan, hang on, okay?
For sure.
Okay, Dan Feinberg is with us. He is a TV critic for the Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, FIEN. Lots of TV to talk about, and some finales happened in between the last time Dan was here, and they're both FX shows. So we'll get to that right after we break for the news right here at 720 WGN.
Don't sing if you want to live long. They have no use for your song. You're dead, you're dead, you're dead. You're dead and out of this world.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here. We are here. It's Thursday, so it's Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in. One artist, three songs. 312-981-7200. That's the phone number. And we're going to be talking more TV stuff. Like, we got shows here that deserve a Deadwood-like movie for closure. And also short-lived and easily forgotten 1980 TV series. That's coming up as well. Right now, though, we're talking TV with Dan Feinberg from the Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, FIEN. Joins us every 2 weeks, and we welcome Dan back. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you, Nick.
All right. You got a couple of FX finales that happened. What did you think of Fosse Verdon's finale and the series in general?
I don't know that my opinions on the series, honestly, ever changed. So I reviewed it off of two episodes, and I think the things that I felt only kind of intensified. I think that my appreciation for Michelle Williams only grew, and she was phenomenal in the finale. The callback to Sweet Charity and all of that was just wonderfully played.
Yeah.
And as I've said several times, that Emmy category, which will also have Patricia Arquette, have Amy Adams, and a few other just really wonderful people, is my most anticipated Emmy category.
Yeah.
So whoever wins, there's no real wrong choice in that group.
Yeah.
I just never really cared about Bob Fosse, because I felt like I'd seen his story before. And then we closed in the finale with all that jazz, you know, being right there, complete with Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Which I had no idea. Did you know about that?
Do you want to know the truth, Nick? The truth is FX said don't spoil it, and they didn't tell us in the email with the screener who was in it, and I hadn't had the time to watch it. So the person who spoiled it for me was you on Facebook.
Oh, no! Oh, no, I'm so sorry, Dan.
Honestly, I do not begrudge you one iota, and when I saw your Facebook post, my reaction was, oh, that's cute, that's nice, excellent.
Jeez, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
I wanted to be honest. Since you asked point blank, I wanted to give you the real answer.
I'll tell you what, while I was watching it, you know, because you don't see him right away. Like, they're cutting him from the bed. I'm like, wow, I wonder who the actor is who's playing, you know, who's playing Roy Scheider. And, you know, like, you see him from the side, you can't really tell it's him. When the camera actually swung around and you saw it was him, I was like, oh, man, that's pretty fantastic. I was very excited. So,
and the thing was, I played little guessing games with a couple colleagues because, again, they told us that it was someone who was spoilable, and for whatever reason, I just didn't consider it was going to be him.
Oh,
I went through my mind kind of thinking about who the producers had connections to, and I thought, okay, well, Joel Fields from the Americans has connections to those people, so maybe Matthew Rhys from the Americans. I can kind of see how they might have Matthew Rhys playing him.
Yeah.
And that would have been fine, and so that was my guess. I asked the colleague said, no, not that, and I said, okay, I'll just wait and watch it, and...
And then I ruined it for you. Okay. Oh man.
Someday I will get revenge on you, but not in time immediately. So I like that bit of casting. I thought that there were lots of grace notes for all of the various actors. I thought that Norbert Leo Butts had a couple of great moments as Patty Chayefsky in the last episode. Yeah. I thought Margaret Qualley was really great as Ed Ranking, and I thought she had that one great scene with the audition for All That Jazz that I thought was superb. All I would have rather had is if it had just been Gwen's show, and so they get to that final closing title, and they're like, okay, 12 years after he died, they put on a show with their collaborative work, and it was called Fosse.
Yeah.
And so I thought, okay, A, this is still only a halfway improvement, and then they don't even mention the fact that Ann Rankin won the Tony for reworking the Fosse choreography on Chicago and, you know, was hailed as a genius for it. So to her contributions there were completely ignored in the closing title. So just enough with the Fosse. I don't need the Fosse. Give me Gwen Verdon, give me Ann Rankin, and that would have been enough for me. But I still enjoyed the series quite a bit.
Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was absolutely great. And I thought that the Patty Chayefsky funeral was heartbreaking. It really destroyed me. And I thought Rockwell was great in that scene. I was a little disappointed. I know it could have gone on for another few hours if they covered Star 80, but I was a little disappointed that they'd really just jumped right over it. When I saw the play card of that, it said that it was, he got the worst reviews of his career when Star 80 came out. I remember when Star 80 came out, at least here in Chicago, it got fantastic reviews. And I love Star 80, and I know that Ebert and Siskel, I mean, you know, those were our go-to guys, obviously, here in Chicago, but they both loved it.
There were critics who loved it, and I don't know that I necessarily would say that it got worse reviews than a couple of the other things. I feel like Lenny was kind of not overwhelmingly loved, but there were definitely people, and there still are, who think that Star 80 is basically exploitative, and I think it's about exploitation. To me, I can kind of draw the line between what it's about and how it's doing what it's doing, and whether the thing is that. So, I mean, I think it's a fantastically made movie. I think it's visceral as heck,
absolutely.
And it hurts in so many different ways.
Yeah.
But I can also see how it would turn people off.
I guess I could. It's a pretty intense. Obviously, it's a very intense movie, and I got to say, I mean, I think Eric Roberts is unbelievable in that movie. I just think his performance is extraordinary, and I love him in it. But I think it's a great movie. That note shocked me when I was like, wait a minute, and I kind of sat there during the scene where they're sort of reunited at the bar and they're talking, because that's what happened. That's the scene afterwards when Gwen and Fosse are at the bar and they're kind of reunited and they're having a little conversation. I was kind of out of it for a moment because I was like, I was retracing my steps back to 1983 when that movie came out, and I was like, hold on a second, I remember that movie getting some good notices. So
I think they could have included it, but I also understand why they didn't, and also understand why they didn't sort of in the context of his relationship with the women they were trying to at least somewhat focus on. So
Other thing is, you know, like a lot of people maybe who don't know, you know, how Bob Fosse died might think they took some dramatic license with it, but the they didn't. And that's kind of the stunning thing about the way Bob Fosse died.
I did not give any thought to that, but I guess I assumed they probably got it right. So.
Yeah. No, they did. I could see a lot of people who were watching it who don't know, you know, much about Bob Fosse were like, there's no way he died that dramatically. Yeah, there is. That's how it happened. So
definitely a very good miniseries, and it will be well-recognized
at
the Emmys.
Absolutely. All right, so What We Do in the Shadows, I thought it was just great. I thought the finale was great, and I don't want to give anything away or spoil anything, but I love the direction they went for that last scene and basically what's going on with Guillermo. I thought that was really kind of an interesting thing to throw into the mix. So
it was better than I expected, because I didn't really figure that it was a show that was going in any serialized way in that manner, and then they tiptoed in the direction of it, and not to spoiling anything, but yeah, I thought it was kind of an amusing twist and sets things up potentially interesting for a second season. There was that episode. There was the rather wacky orgy episode the week before. That was that was impressive, and probably pushing to about whatever extreme you can get away with in terms of just graphic discussion on FX. Obviously didn't really show anything, but
there was a line, specific line, I'm not going to say, I can't say it on the air, there's a specific line that Matt Berry has that I just couldn't stop laughing. It's one of my favorite lines of anything in any show this year, but I can't say it. But it was very funny, and I love Natasha Dimitru. I think she's so great on that show. And I don't, you know, I know she's British, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And she's a stand-up comedian.
I'm not sure on her background, but yes, she is British, and that is not her accent that she is.
Well, yeah. But I love her on the show. I just think she's spectacularly funny. Every word that comes out of her mouth, every facial expression, every take to the camera kills me from her.
I didn't love the Gregor storyline, and I could have probably done without it, but I thought that it ended well.
It did end. So. It ended hysterically. Yeah, I mean, I saw it coming. You know. I mean, clearly they set it up. They're like, here, get this cord to hold this thing here, and I'm like, well, he's going to get his head cut off. Well, now I just ruined it for everybody. But yeah, that moment is, I mean, absolutely hilarious. Though I did laugh very hard at it, and I think Matt Berry is hysterical on the show as well.
I think he is. I think he's very funny, and I thought all of his various porn takeoffs, vampire porn takeoffs, were quite amusing and showed stylistic dedication, I guess, to classic adult cinematic style.
Yeah.
Let's just say it that way.
Yeah, and I also loved his reaction when Guillermo had the stakes. When he first saw Guillermo with the stakes, just his reaction and the dialogue that comes out of his mouth there just cracked me up. I thought the show on a whole, I really, really enjoyed it, and I can't wait for it to come back second season. So
it'll be a little bit down the road.
All right, okay, Dan, hang on, okay.
Sure.
Okay, we got a lot of reviews to hear from Dan Feinberg now that we've wrapped up some of the season finales and such, and we'll get to some new stuff and find out what Dan thinks of some of the shows that are coming up, shows that have just debuted. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for Talk and Text. We'll take a break and be back after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. One artist, three songs. Get your requests in now at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Dan Feinberg, he joins us every couple of weeks. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Let's welcome Dan back. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you, Nick.
Hey, I just wanted to let you know that my dad really loves this segment and really likes you, but he has no idea what the hell we're talking about because he never watches any new TV. But he loves.
You can't even get him to watch Baskets?
He doesn't. No, he doesn't even watch. He doesn't watch anything. My dad, if it's like past 1975, he won't watch it. But he loves our segment, so he's like, "Yeah, he's great." And I'm like, "Well, Dad, you don't know what the hell we're talking about. You know, like we'll talk about what we did in the shadows." My dad's like, "I don't know what that is, but you guys sounded great." And he's really smart. And I'm like, "Okay, I'll let him know."
Well, I appreciate him saying that, but I would love it if we could convince him to watch one thing, just one of our various repeated things that we talk about every single week. If he could just get hooked on one, I think that would be satisfying.
I can guarantee you he'd hate baskets. I guarantee you he would hate baskets. So, but I just
entirely
wanted,
fair.
I just wanted to let you know that. All right, so I watched the and you posted a review of this. I watched the pilot of Nosferatu. And I don't know what the hell. I thought it was terrible. There's no vampires in it. There are no vampires in it. It's called Nosferatu, and there are no vampires in it. So about half an hour in, I'm like, are there going to be any vampires in this thing? What's going on? There's like, what is, I don't even know what the hell is that. There's a magical bridge, a time traveling bridge, and then you got a drunk father who beats the mother and the teenage girl, and there's classism where she lives, and then the time travel motorcycle, and then there's the old guy driving around with a kid in the back of the car, and now he's not old. I was like, what the hell is going on? I thought the pilot was awful. I'm gonna give it another chance. I'll watch it again next week, but man.
I can't believe that was the conclusion. Like, you just went through this whole closing argument, and then you're like, yeah, I don't watch it again.
Well, I mean, I'm just curious to see what direction this thing, if there's going to be a vampire. Does a vampire show up at all?
No, there's no vampire.
Okay, well then,
six episodes, and it doesn't get better, Nick.
So
it does not get better. There is no reason for you to keep watching if you didn't like it, and it's not really very good. The absence of vampires is, I mean, as I discussed in my review, the title is so much not worth the effort in terms of the cleverness and amusement it delivers, but also in terms of anything it has to do with anything.
Yeah.
As you say, the main character played by Zachary Quinto is not a vampire. He doesn't exactly absorb the souls of anything else. He drives a Rolls-Royce Wraith, and the car functionally absorbs the energy from children, which allows the main character played by Zachary Quinto to de-age. But what you have is, it's like a joke being made by the main character about a thing that he's not, emphasizing to anyone who looks that he's killing children, basically. It's like he's advertising being evil, but he's not even advertising the kind of evil that he is. The title is not worth it because it sets up an expectation so that people like you, Nick, watch because they think, "Oh, Nosferatu."
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. I gotta say, you know, I had a bad feeling about this going in because AMC usually goes nuts with they saturate advertising, and I didn't even know this thing existed until that Sunday night, and I missed it, so I had to watch it, you know, on demand. And so I didn't even know this thing existed. Normally, you know, AMC will throw it down your throat, you know, for a couple of months before they debut something. But this got nothing, and I got a feeling because they knew it sucked.
But it's even then it's confusing because, okay, it is a horror-related show, although not really scary in the least. But it's a horror show, so automatically, therefore, you premiere it in June. Not exactly sure why that's what's happening, though I guess it's timed around Fear the Walking Dead because it's the platform they have, and so they got to use the platform. They could have used regular Walking Dead as a platform in October, which would have made more sense.
Right.
But then also the backdrop of it, so it's a June premiere, and the backdrop is that this guy takes the kids to a place called Christmas Land, but it needs to be emphasized. And I've read the book, and I've seen six episodes. Nobody really gets to Christmas Land.
Yeah.
So, in the book, they do eventually get to Christmas Land with, like, about 50 pages left, and it's not very good. And the book is, it's a mixed bag. The book is by Joe Hill, who is Stephen King's son.
Yeah.
And if you read it, it reads like a pastiche of his father. And this is something that, he started off doing early in his writing career and has somewhat gotten away from. But this one is very much, you just go one thing after another. It's like, okay, well, the car is basically Carrie, only it's a Rolls Royce. He's basically the main character from Salem's Lot, except that, as we may have mentioned in this conversation,
he's not a vampire.
Not actually a vampire. it's just one thing after another. You know, and there even are specific references. If you pause things, there's a map that makes the reference to Pennywise.
Yep.
And, you know, it's very much in the Stephen King universe. But the book is also a mess. And as I said in my review, if you're dealing with a messy book and adapting it, it allows you to fix things. Unfortunately, I think they made almost everything worse and less scary. And, yeah, it's a problem. And, again, I've seen six episodes, and it does not get better. You know, I guess I would tell people who liked the first episode that I've seen six episodes, and it doesn't get appreciably worse. So,
all
there
right.
you go.
Well, let me ask you about, can I ask you about the lead, Ashley Cummings? Where is she from?
She is Australian, and she is 26, and she reads on screen as being around 26.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
She's playing 18, and it's not particularly realistic. Also, she isn't really able to do a Boston accent, and everyone around her is doing the hammy, thick Boston accents, and, you know, not necessarily horribly, but definitely committedly hammy, and she can't do it. I don't think she's bad, but she's not convincing as the age she's playing or the place she's supposed to be from, and those are at least minor things to acting.
She reads older than the actress playing her mother.
Right.
Yeah, I was kind of just like I was baffled by the whole thing. I mean, I watched it all, and when it was over, I was like, "What the hell was that?" And I immediately texted Tom, my producer, and I was like, "You know, there are no vampires in this," because we were both kind of excited about it, you know, and we were both like, "Well, you know, we need our vampire fix now that what we do in the shadows is gone." And then I watched this thing, and I texted him, "I'm like, there are no vampires in it." And then I told him what was in it: the magic time traveling bridge. You know, the abusive father, and an old man taking a kid to Christmas Village or Christmas Land or whatever the hell it is, and he's like, "What?"
And the thing is, the explanation for the magical bridge, I mean, it's not really an explanation per se, but they start giving kind of names to things, and they refer to it as an inscape, and the characters who can do these things are called strong creatives, and it's one of those genre pieces where they keep repeating those things over and over again in the hopes that they won't sound ridiculous at a certain point, and they never don't sound ridiculous.
Oh, it's so bad. All right, well, I'm glad to see that I don't have to watch the rest of it, because I was going to give it another chance, but now that I hear that you're as bad. And I watched it on demand, and, you know, on the VOD, and on VOD you can't fast forward through the commercials. So at every single break, Chris Hardwick comes on and goes, "Enjoy Nosferatu. Talking Dead is coming up next." And so I had to see that every single break. All the commercials. Pretty much.
If that sounds awful.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was really excited to watch it, and, you know, and I love Chris Hardwick, but I don't care about Talking Dead, and I didn't need to see him say, "Enjoy Nosferatu," and I was like, wow, yeah. So, anyway, it's bad. I think we've...
It is definitely not good.
Okay. Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
Dan Feinberg is with us. We'll take a break, and we come back, we'll get some reviews, hopefully of some good stuff here, on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live on the 18th floor here at the Allstate Skyline Studio here till 5 a.m. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs. We're going to talk about TV shows that deserve a Deadwood-like movie so that we can have some closure, and some forgettable 80s shows that actually did exist. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And we're talking TV right now with Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we welcome Dan back. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you, Nick.
All right. Have you seen the entire series of Big Little Lies?
I have only seen 3 episodes, and frankly, I'm a little bit amazed they even sent us that many. So I'm grateful to have seen 3 episodes of the new season of Big Little Lies.
Okay, so Good Little Lies comes back for its second season. They have enough ringers on this show already, but they added Meryl Streep to the mix. And so tell us, what do you think about the new season of Big Little Lies?
Well, the first thing I have to say is there are no vampires. Seriously.
Okay.
Everyone should just know this.
All right. Thank you.
No, the fun of Big Little Lies in the first season, and, it was often a fun show. It dealt with serious topics of abuse and murder and other things of that nature. But the fun of the first season was watching Nicole Kidman, Reese Witherspoon, Shailene Woodley, and particularly as the first season went along, Laura Dern just kind of bouncing off each other. None of the rest of it would even matter. They could be doing anything. And the fun of the second season is exactly that simple. You take those wonderful actors and then you throw Meryl Streep into it.
Yeah.
It is so much beyond an embarrassment of riches.
Yeah.
The stacked cast of actresses here, and Meryl Streep is great. And I know that's going to be controversial. I know that it's what, on the Twitter we call a hot take.
Yeah.
But I'll just stand by it. Meryl Streep is a talented actress. And watching her bounce dialogue off of Nicole Kidman, Reese Witherspoon, and Laura Dern is magnificent. That's it. And so none of the rest of it even matters. There is not a plot line that is as mysterious and compelling as either the central murder of the first season or of Nicole Kidman's character coming to terms with her abusive marriage and all of that. There's nothing that is, at least initially, quite on that level. But Meryl Streep plays the Alexander Skarsgård character's mother, and she is in Monterey ostensibly helping Nicole Kidman's character's basically just with her kids, who we already know have problems of their own.
Yeah.
From either nature or nurture. And so gradually, and not even really gradually, very quickly, Meryl Streep's character gets suspicious, and, we'll see how it progresses from there. But it's just so much fun to watch her going. And
yeah.
None of the rest of it even matters.
Yeah. Well, no, that's what it seems like to me. I mean, I'm excited to see it. I liked the first season. I didn't love it. I wasn't crazy about it. I know a lot of people who really thought it was amazing and everything. And again, watching those actresses is terrific. But, as soon as they announced that Meryl Streep was going to be in it, I'm like, well, this is just going to be a blast. So.
And they're getting more use out of Laura Dern. I think they kind of realized, I think the first season kind of began with, okay, it's this big three. And no offense at all to Shailene Woodley, who I think is really very good here. But I think they realized that if they could have substituted Laura Dern in for the big three and made it those three,
yeah,
it would have been kind of a matching of equals. I think for some reason they underestimated Laura Dern, and I don't know why anyone would do that. But
yeah.
I just think they didn't realize that she could hold her own completely and totally, and so they're giving her more to do. The men will have a little bit more to do as well. And again, Meryl Streep.
Yeah, how would anybody underestimate Laura Dern? I mean, my God.
I don't know. I think what it was probably was simply Laura Dern was willing to do what was effectively the, fifth or sixth name on the call sheet part.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just that simple. They were like, okay, awesome.
Yeah.
Laura Dern, and she's doing this part that is really down the call sheet. And then gradually as the season goes along, you could see them recognizing that every single time Laura Dern was on screen, she was, if not stealing scenes from the other actresses, every bit, they're equal and they're foiled.
Yeah.
So I think they're pretty much realizing this season. But
yeah.
And similarly, I feel like I haven't mentioned Zoe Kravitz, who is the fifth member of that actress team. And she's also very good. So I would hate to ignore her entirely.
Yeah. If anybody needs proof that Laura, you don't need proof that Laura Dern is fantastic.
No.
Just go back and watch the 2 seasons of Enlightened. That's all I'm saying. One of my favorite shows of all time. And we actually did a topic last week, Dan, where we talked about, Tom, what was the, was it Ranker who did the, oh, Vulture. It was Vulture.com ranked every HBO show. Enlightened was pretty high on the list. I was very happy to see that.
The two writers who did that, they're friends of mine, and they are good, smart people, and they did a very good job. A list like that are always going to infuriate people, and that's basically the reason they exist.
Oh, sure.
But all things considered, even within the confines of objections, and I mean the fact that to me they didn't have The Wire as number one, I find that infuriating. Well, but I can also deal with it.
Well, no, that was the thing that made me nuts, Dan, is that The Wire came in number three. I was like, no. Sorry.
And, you know, I of course, disagree with that. Clearly, I disagree with that. The Wire is the best TV show ever made. But, yeah, within the confines of a list that is 75 things long and that people are going to disagree with like crazy, I thought they did just about as good as two humans could do.
It was great. I loved it. And we had a fun time talking about it. And obviously, it started a really fun conversation talking. And I had forgotten about some of the shows. When I saw that the list was 75 deep, I was like, "Really?" And that didn't even include like, you know, your John Olivers and your Bill Maher and all that stuff,
or miniseries like Band of Brothers or The Pacific or movies.
Generation Kill.
Very specific.
Yeah, Generation Kill wasn't considered either. It was a fun list. Although The Wire should have been number one.
Agreed.
Yeah, okay. Handmaid's Tale, I will be watching when I get home this morning. And Hulu has posted the first three episodes, right? And then every Wednesday they'll do another episode, like they did last couple of seasons.
Yep, that is the way they're doing it. And I saw, God, how many did I see? I don't even remember how many I saw. I think I might have seen five or six. And I confess that some fatigue is beginning to set in for me on it.
I think that's going to be the case for me too. Because by the end of the second season, I was like, I don't know how much farther they can go with this, despite the fact that the production values are amazing, and of course the acting, especially by Elizabeth Moss. By the way, have you seen her smell, Dan?
I have not, but that's a funny sentence to say, and I know exactly what you're saying. But
it's the performance of the year, Dan. It is she is unbelievably amazing in that movie, and so she's just the best. And you can see it as soon as you can, if you can.
I have definitely heard good things about it, and she continues to be super, and it continues to be beautifully shot. The supporting cast continues to be very strong. I guess I just felt watching the first couple episodes in particular that it was kind of spinning its wheels or running on fumes or however you want to put it. And then probably by the third and fourth and fifth episodes, I began to see some hints of slightly different directions that the show was trying to go. And I did appreciate that. And I'm going to keep watching it. I'm definitely not so fatigued that I'm done with it.
Yeah.
But I just watched the first couple going, boy, this did not fix the things that I was concerned were a problem at the end of last season. It still is very strong, and no one who entirely turned on the show last season should think that they can tune back in and enjoy it. It hasn't like suddenly become a different show. I wish I felt like they had a little bit more to say, a little bit more finger on the pulse. And boy, Elizabeth Moss is still very, very good.
She's just the best. I watch her in anything. I just saw the trailer for that new movie with her, Melissa McCarthy, and Tiffany Haddish called The Kitchen.
Which some people are comparing to Widows, and that's only because those people have seen Widows, but they haven't seen NBC's Good Girls, because it's much more like NBC's Good Girls, if you ask me.
Yeah, it is. But it looks pretty good, and I Elizabeth Moss like running around killing people with a gun sounds fine to me. So I She's having a good year. She's having a bunch of good years recently. But I mean,
I'm glad though that she has begun to get more of these movie roles, and I think the fact that Handmaid's Tale gives her a little bit more time to do that, because it's only the 10 episodes or whatever, or 13, I guess. It gives her a tiny bit more chance to do movies, because she really did very, very few movies during West Wing and Mad Men.
Yeah.
And so I'm glad that someone has begun to notice that she can really, regardless of what you ask her to do, she can do it.
Well, I mean, she can do anything between, this new season of Handmaid's Tale, between the upcoming Kitchen and Her Smell and Us. I mean, it's been a pretty great year for her. And she's definitely my favorite actress working today. So, All right, so that's Handmaid's Tale. Now, that debuted on Wednesday, and it's there are three episodes, correct? Because I'm going to probably go.
Yes.
So that's what I'm looking forward to, are three episodes.
It's an intense show to binge, though. I guess I did watch all of the episodes that I saw in one afternoon, so...
Have at it.
Enjoy. Man. Have fun.
Have fun. Now, the season doesn't open like the Fenway Park scene. Does it open like that? Because that was just like,
no,
I couldn't even.
But that was fantastic.
Yeah.
If it opened like that, that would be great. No, it opens basically exactly where the last season concluded.
Yeah.
So if you were infuriated with where the last season ended, that is exactly where it picks up, and it kind of has to deal with that and rationalize that. And I think that a lot of people felt like, again, not spoiling anything, but the decision that she made in the finale was not a justifiable one,
right,
or not a one that people could understand, and they spend a lot of time in the first couple episodes trying to explain or justify it without all that much success.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to watch it anyway. All right, Dan.
Sure.
Thanks. Hang on a second, okay?
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us, and we're going to take a quick break for the news. When we come back, we'll talk more TV with Dan and get a couple more reviews from him and more. And again, you can follow him at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, on both Twitter and Facebook. We'll take a break here on 720 WGN.
Just to hold you tight. Guess it's far the best. I just put in my last dime.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here on the 18th floor above beautiful downtown Chicago. Here till 5 a.m. It is Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We're going to do some TV topics a little bit later on. We got shows here that deserve a Deadwood-style movie so that we can have some closure. Those are some of those shows we're going to talk about. And then short-lived and easily forgotten 1980s TV series as well. And we might even talk about the best TV pilots of all time. So that's all coming up. And that conversation is being triggered by our biweekly conversation with Dan Feinberg from The Hollywood Reporter. Joins us to talk TV every 2 weeks. And you can follow him on Twitter, at The Fine Print, on Facebook, at The Fine Print. And that's F-I-E-N. And let's welcome Dan back to the show. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you. Those are some very big topics.
Yeah, yeah, they are. Now, I would love to get your take on at least one of them when before we get out of here, like a show that deserves a Deadwood like movie for closure.
Do you want that now, or do you want it before I duck out?
No, let's do it. Go ahead.
There was an IndieWire critics poll question that was along these lines a couple weeks ago, and my answer was half none because. You're playing with fire with these. The chances of destroying a legacy of a perfectly good show is way too difficult. But if you could get the entire cast of Freaks and Geeks together to do a Big Chill style reunion, where they basically all gather together at the funeral for James Franco's character, I would watch the heck out of that.
Yeah. It would be difficult to get the paychecks, though, because at this point, those people earn a lot of money. But no, that's a great one, and I'm sure a lot of people would agree with that. You know, Freaks.
But even with that, though, it's not that I like. It's not like Deadwood in the sense that that was a show that left me without an ending. You know, it wasn't necessarily its intended finale as a series finale, but I think it ends well. All it is that was a good group of characters that if you put them together 15 years later, I would want to see what they were up to next. And it's just that simple, is that if Judd Apatow and Paul Feig said, we can get these people together and do a kind of shambling 2-hour and 15-minute comedy set in the mid-90s that did some of the same things as Freaks and Geeks and just put those characters in a different decade, I would watch that. It would not have to answer any questions for me. It would not have to solve any riddles. I would just want to spend another 2 hours with those characters. And that, to me, is an easier way of handling this question than what is a show that left me with things that I need to know the answers to. Right.
Okay, that makes sense. That's a good take on it. Okay, so Swamp Things, more comic book stuff to talk about here.
Tell us.
Yeah, exactly. So tell us about Swamp Thing, the new show. And CW, correct?
No, it is DC Universe.
Oh, DC Universe.
Yes, DC Universe, which has in recent months been the home to Doom Patrol, which was relatively decent, and one of these days I will finish the last 7 or 8 episodes of that season, sort of a quirky and appealing anti-superhero show, and then the Horrible Titans that I dropped out on quickly. So they're trying to do basically adult adaptations of DC properties, and there's nothing wrong with that. And Swamp Thing, they only sent critics 2 episodes, and so what I can say is it's a decent enough origin story for a comic book show, and that it could basically be on the CW, except that the characters swear a little, and that's about it. There's a little violence and sort of some somewhat gross creature effects that they very clearly either borrowed, stole, or paid homage to the Thing.
Oh,
on, and it's very easy to
little tribute to Rob Bottin down there.
Exactly. Yeah, I would even call it a rather big tribute to Rob Bottin. Which, you know, look, if you're gonna steal from the best.
Exactly.
Except for the fact that it's one of those things where they stole it, but it's all CG, and so it takes all the fun away, a little bit like the Thing prequel remake that they did a couple of years ago, where they initially announced that they were doing as much as they could practical, and then it ended up being virtually non-practical. And I think I was somewhat impressed because they trimmed the episode count from 13 down to 10, and usually things like that are bad signs, and the fact that they only sent out the first 2 episodes and that they're only an origin story suggests that maybe the actual series itself, once it gets going, won't be so good. But I was pleasantly surprised on a very low level with how decent I thought it was.
Okay. How does it compare to the Wes Craven movie? Because that's I don't read comic books, but I have a very soft spot in my heart for the Wes Craven movie, mostly because of Adrian Barbeau. But it's got to be a completely different tone, right?
It's a very, very different tone, and this is me going off of memory where I have definitely not watched that movie in 25 years, probably.
Fair enough.
Nor have I felt any desire to watch that movie in 25 years. I think that it is probably more even.
Yeah.
Because all I remember is thinking that movie was wildly all over the place, and it feels like it could be a CW show, but the CW does okay superhero shows. Sometimes they then grind them into dust and they go off the tracks or whatever, but I think sort of in principle they mostly start off pretty decently, and this one felt like it did also. But then again, people would have to have DC Universe to be able to watch it at all, and you'd have to have DC Universe.
Okay. All right. So you talked to the director of Wu-Tang Clan of Mics and Men, and then you saw that at Sundance, didn't you?
I saw the first 2 hours at Sundance, yeah.
Okay, and it's a 4-hour documentary about the Wu-Tang Clan. Tell me about that, and then tell me about your discussion.
It's a really good documentary. It's one of my favorite nonfiction programs of the year so far, and it was one of the best things I saw at Sundance. It's just there's a lot of candor from the surviving members of the Wu-Tang Clan. It covers a lot of terrain. It's does a very good job of situating their upbringing and showing kind of the group's rise, and then not really exactly fall, because they didn't exactly have a fall, but they had a splintering, and it covers that well. It does a good job in the later episodes with dealing with the notorious one-of-a-kind, once-upon-a-time in Shaolin album that was purchased by pharmaceutical douchebag Martin Shirelli. I think it's a really good documentary, and I had a good conversation with Sasha Jenkins about it. It was an Emmy-timed conversation, and so there's a short version in the Hollywood Reporter magazine, but I got to throw it all up there online for the interwebs, because we don't necessarily have borders.
Yeah.
And it's just an interesting chat, because he goes into some depth on the fact that the guys were all executive producers on the movie, and that's sometimes a bad sign. You don't necessarily want your subjects to be the executive producers of your documentary.
Oh, sure.
He talked about why he needed to do that and what was important. He talked about their reactions to seeing it at Sundance. He talked about getting an interview with Divine, who is RZA's brother and who was the manager when the splintering happened. And he has, for whatever reason, rarely been featured in public, and yet he's very candid in the documentary. So lots of really just good details. It was a good chat about a documentary that I think is very good. My parents watched a couple episodes of it. They are not Wu-Tang Clan fans, but they particularly enjoyed the first episode, and I think the first two episodes are just really great, and I think the second two episodes are just very good. I think it's for fans, I think it is probably indispensable, but if you also are generally Wu curious, I think it's worth checking out. It's all available on demand now. So.
Okay, and it's at, and that's Showtime.
Yep.
Okay, excellent. All right, Dan, what, are you looking forward to anything coming up?
Well, I'm looking forward to going in just a couple hours to Austin for the ATX TV Festival.
Wow.
So this will be a weekend of moderating panels, queso, and barbecue. So that is what I'm looking for. It is a lot of work, but also a lot of queso.
All right.
So that's
cool.
What I'm looking forward
well,
to.
Well, have a great trip, have a great time, and we'll talk about it when you come back in a couple of weeks, Dan. All right?
Sounds good.
Take
talk
care.
To you soon.
Okay, Dan Feinberg. I can't believe I ruined Fosse and Verdon for him. I'm so sorry. All right, that's Dan Feinberg. He'll be back in a couple of weeks. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at TheFineprint, F-I-E-N. We'll take a break here on 720 WGN.
I'm free to be whatever I choose, and I'll sing the blues if I want.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It is Thursday. That means Triple Play Thursday. You hear Triple Play Thursday? That's one artist, three songs. That was our first set of Triple Play Thursday. Who requested that?
That was Aaron from Indianapolis. Wanted to hear Oasis, so that was whatever.
All right, there you go. Little Oasis for you. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here till 5 a.m., live in the Allstate Skyline studio. And if you want to join us, we're going to be talking about shows that also deserve a Deadwood-style movie so that we can have some closure. Lots of TV shows were canceled unceremoniously or taken away from us and left us hanging, and many fans of many shows want to seek some closure. And we got that. As Deadwood fans, it took 13 years, but we got closure, and we got really good, satisfying closure with the terrific two-hour Deadwood movie, which aired on Friday and is available now on HBO. But not a lot of fans of TV shows get that gift. So there's a lot of shows out there that we would love to see some closure. Get back in there, do a two-hour movie like David Milch did with the Deadwood movie for shows that, we want some closure. Now, what was the first one? We have this. This list was from Vulture.com. And what was what would be like your first, the first thing that pops into your head?
Don? Oh, man. Well, Dan Feinberg kind of took mine with Freaks and Geeks.
Yeah.
Because that's just
Freaks and Geeks is in this article,
of course,
too, and it should be, of course.
That's a tough one. I'd say Pushing Daisies.
That's in his article as well.
My God,
yeah, that was a great show.
Amazing,
yeah, a great show.
Amazing,
and we can get the story behind why that thing was canceled. It didn't make any sense to me. I guess nobody was watching.
Yeah,
it, but
I will say a good one that we did get. Were you a Firefly person?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I love Serenity.
The movie was better than the TV series.
It definitely is.
And I like the TV series. I thought the TV series was fun, but the movie was really good.
And it's scary.
Yeah.
What do they call them? The Reavers or something like that? There's some amazing stuff going on, and that was an amazing way to cap off that series.
Well, for me, mm-hmm. the first one that popped into my head when we were talking about this, what show do you want to come back so you get some closure, you know, with a two-hour, without question? It's My So-Called Life. The first thing that popped into my head was My So-Called Life. To see where Angela and Jordan are now. The beautiful and lovely and hilarious Vanessa Bayer was on Colbert the other day.
Mm-hmm.
She's written a children's book. I did not know this. She was sick as a teenager. She was a Make-A-Wish kid. She had cancer.
Oh, my God.
And she was like 15 and 16 and went through chemo for years and treatment, and she's cancer-free now.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what the book is about. The book it's a children's book with illustrations, and it's about caring for a sick bear, B-E-A-R.
Oh, man.
And it's a little bear, and it's about how friends, you know, being close to sick friends of their age, it helps. Because Vanessa Bayer said it helped her immensely when her friends were so supportive and her school was so supportive while she was going through what she was going through. And I had no idea that she was a cancer survivor and that she was sick. But she was a Make-A-Wish. She tells this story to Colbert. Colbert goes, "Were you a Make-A-Wish kid?" And she goes, "Yeah," because that's how bad it was. That's how bad her cancer was. And so she said, "Yeah, I was a Make-A-Wish. I was a Make-A-Wish kid." And he's like, "What was your wish? Who did you wish for?" And she goes, "Well, my choice was Jared Leto." Because she was a My So-Called Life fanatic.
Oh, my God.
She goes, "My choice was Jared Leto because of My So-Called Life. I adored him on that, and that's who I wanted to meet." And then I thought about it, and I said, "You know what?" Because at a young age, she knew she wanted to be a performer. She knew she wanted to do comedy and be a performer in some way. And then she got sidetracked with this illness for about a year and a half. So she tells Colbert, "Then I decided, no, you know what? I'm going to meet him when we're peers." And so she never met him, but she did meet him. They met at an award show, and they showed a picture, and she's like, "I achieved it. I met him as a peer."
Wow.
Isn't that fantastic?
I love that. I really do. Is she still on SNL?
No, she's way gone.
Yeah, I figured she had. But like, she was just always a very bright person on the show.
Man.
That you would never guess that she had suffered. Maybe it's because she suffered so much that she had to like find this.
That's what she was talking about. Because she, you know, like you see her, she brightens up a room. She's got the biggest and the best smile of like any human being on the planet. And I adore her both on and off screen. But she was so great on SNL. Such a solid character player, you know, did great scene work. And she brought some really memorable characters. I mean, the Bar Mitzvah boy is one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life. And then, like, right before she left, she introduced this nervous new weather woman where she was speaking in gibberish and saying, "Hep." And it was like she debuted that character like 2 weeks before she, 3 weeks before she left. And because it went over so well, because it was such a hilarious character, because she was doing old school, like, vaudevillian, what they would call double talk, where she wasn't, nothing she said made any sense, but she just kept going and one of her catchphrases was "Hep." And so, like, they would cut back to Michael Che. He's like, "I don't understand anything that you just said. I don't understand what's going on with the weather. You want to give it another shot?" And it's all about her being, she was like nervous in front of the camera. So she debuts this thing about 3 weeks before she's leaving. And it went over so well that they did it the next 2 weeks. Like, they were like, "Okay, just, we know you're leaving, but this character is unbelievable." So they cut back to her again. But I love that story. I thought that was just such a great story. "Now it's okay. I'll meet him when we're peers." And he did. And they showed the picture, and it was awesome.
I wonder what a So-Called Life movie would look like.
It would be... It would
have
to be
one of those check-in ones. You know, it's like,
yeah,
where are they now?
And I just, you know, I would like to think that Angela and Jordan are on their fourth kid, you know, and that they're happily married. And but he's, you know, like, Jared Leto is such a weirdo that I don't know if, you know, I mean, back then he was a teenager, you know, and he didn't develop the weird habits that he has already. All the crap that he pulled on the Suicide Squad set is just absurd. He's a weird dude, and you know, he wasn't in 30 Seconds to Mars back then and all that stuff. So I don't know what he would, you know, because he's method dude now. So I don't know how he would reinterpret Jordan Catalano. I'm not really sure.
Well, if he was going to be playing Jordan as a dad with four kids, he would have to like go into someone. He'd pay a family, to let them pretend to be their dad.
How would I handle this situation? Yeah, he's a good actor though, man. I mean, you know, he's weird, and I don't approve of the on-set antics that he's known for. Especially on Suicide Squad, the crap that he pulled on Suicide Squad.
Very strange.
Oh, man. But he's good, man. You look at a lot of his performances. I mean, you know, obviously Dallas Buyers Club, Requiem for a Dream.
It's one of those things where, for me, when he's good, he's really good. Like, I really enjoyed him in Dallas Buyers Club.
Yeah.
And I was the guy that was just like, I really did not like Jared Leto growing up because I didn't watch My So-Called Life. He was just the dude from 30 Seconds to Mars.
Yeah.
And I hated them. I thought they were terrible.
I can understand that. But the thing is, I mean, like, I mean, I loved My So-Called Life. I mean, ridiculous. And that ended, I mean, seriously, that is one of the shows that, like, when they canceled it, I was like, are you kidding me? You're leaving it like this? So, but Jordan, I can understand if you didn't watch My So-Called Life, like, knowing Jared Leto from some of the film roles and some of the 30 Seconds to Mars, it's easy to go, this guy's a douche.
Yeah, but I came around on him. But when he's bad, he's really bad.
Yeah, he's Blade Runner. He's great in Blade Runner.
He is very good in Blade Runner.
And I'm So, I mean, I'm a fan. I'm actually a fan. But it would be really weird to see those two back, because especially because, you know, Claire Danes is like now Homeland Woman. Like, she's known as for the woman who has meltdowns and psychological issues and all that stuff. And it'll be interesting to see them go back. But that was the first show that popped into my head without question that closure was My So-Called Life.
Yeah.
And there are more. There are a lot out there. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to jump in. Oh, Brian Tallarico wrote this. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool. Brian's a good friend of mine. He's a member of the Chicago Film Critics Association. He's been on the show before.
He's excellent. Love him.
He's a great writer. I didn't know Brian wrote this. Shout out to Brian Tallarico, terrific writer. Not only and again, busy guy, because he writes a lot about movies, but he also covers TV for a lot of outlets on the internet. So here's his intro. This is what Brian says here. Fans of David Milch's Deadwood were given a gift denied to almost all fan bases of canceled TV shows. That would be closure. Deadwood, the movie, premiering almost 13 years after the HBO critical darling was unceremoniously cut off, allows fans to catch up with characters they never thought they'd see again in any form. It got us thinking, what other shows need that same treatment? We're not demanding a reboot or a new season a la Twin Peaks, which was so fantastic. Although that would be fine, too, in a lot of these cases. But a feature-length film to tie up those loose ends and give us the goodbyes that the cruel television industry has withheld from us for so long. There are dozens of shows that can be classified as brilliant but canceled. But these are the programs that the subcategory from that subcategory that really feel like they have something more to say. He also says, unlike HBO's incredible Enlightened, which was mentioned a little bit earlier with when I was talking with Dan, one of my favorite shows ever, for example, whose second and final season finale felt satisfying, which is true because they canceled Enlightened after only two seasons. But the thing is, I think Mike White knew they were going to cancel it and decided that like the second season was going to have a very satisfactory ending because because nobody was watching the show and he figured that he figured, that's it. We're only going to have these two seasons, so let's make this final season, and then especially the final episode, the finale episode, to have some closure. And they did it right. I mean, I was really sad that Enlightened got canceled after the second episode, but they didn't pull the rug out from under us. It really did have a satisfying ending. So there you go. But here are some of the examples that they have about wanting to have some closure. And we'll get to that in a second, because I want to take a break. And when we come back, we want to hear from you. Talk or text 312-981-7200. What TV show was yanked away from you and you want a Deadwood-like movie, a two-hour movie, just to get some closure and catch up with the characters again? All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And obviously, you know, I don't know how many times we're going to hear Freaks and Geeks this morning, which is fine because clearly that's definitely high on the list of ones
we have to talk it into existence.
Yeah, that's what we have to do. God, like I was telling Dan, can you imagine the paycheck that they would have to pay? The budget of that thing, considering how big everybody is on that from that show now?
I guarantee you, if they got everyone together, they would take SAG scale.
I bet they would. I bet they really would. If they could get that back together again for the fans, they would do that. They would be don't pay us what
they
we,
totally
you know, I get $30 million a movie, but I'll just take, you know, scale for this. So, and I hope everybody hears that. Seth Rogen, if you're out there, cut your price tag, will you? All right, let's take a break. We'll come back after this on 720 WGN.
Today is going to be the day that they're going to throw it back to you. By now, you should have somehow realized what you got to do. I don't believe that anybody feels the way I do about you now.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WG, and I don't care. I love these guys.
Oh, they're amazing.
I don't care. I mean, I know that there's a faction of people that can't stand them, and that they're pompous, and that they once said they were better than the Beatles, and that they're, you know, that they owe everything to the Beatles and all that stuff. And I don't care what your criticism is. Oasis is a great band.
Absolutely.
And I love the relationship between the two idiots.
So funny.
Have you ever seen? By the way, it's Nick DiGilio, and we're back. on WGN. And if you want to join us, it's 312-981-7200. Coming up, Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5, and also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on 720 WGN. We're talking about shows that deserve a Deadwood-style movie so that we can have some closure. Now let me ask you a question, Tom, speaking of Oasis, before we jump back into this. Have you ever seen the interview that Conan did with Sacha Baron Cohen? Where he talks about his encounter with Liam Gallagher.
Yeah.
It's one of the funniest, it's truly one of the funniest stories I've ever seen told on a talk show. Unbelievably funny.
It's insane. I can't even imagine being in a room with Liam Gallagher.
No.
Because he is, he's a bit off, but yeah, a pretty regular dude.
But
Liam is off his head. He's insane.
Completely. I remember when Liam claimed that he was sick and they were supposed to do like an unplugged show. He claimed that he was sick and he pulled out at the last minute, so Noel had to do it on his own. And then Liam shows up in the balcony drunk, drinking beer and heckling him.
What a jerk. What a jerk. Love it.
Yeah, me too. And I love their music. I think they're great. Nice choice for Triple Play Thursday. We'll get one more of those. Triple Play Thursday. It's a one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. So let's get back into this. Let's talk about shows that were yanked out away from us and that we want like a Deadwood movie, a two-hour movie for some closure. 312-981-7200. There's Doc again. Hey, Doc.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
I don't know if this rises the need for a two-hour movie, but you use the word yank. And when you're a real loyal watcher of a show, you feel betrayed. And I love the show Boston Public.
Yeah, see, that's a show that I never watched. It ended abruptly, Boston Public?
Yeah, and what's the guy's name, David F. Kelly?
David E. Kelly.
It was right at the time Boston Legal was starting. And I was thinking maybe he didn't want two shows with the term Boston in it.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, he used to write every episode, and you saw where it was every other one. But, you know, it had Ty McBride as his principal. But other people that came and went on that show, Kathy Baker, Michael Rapaport, Bridget Monaghan.
Yeah.
But it just ended. And then all of a sudden, Boston Legal was on. And never heard a word about it.
Yeah, it's
and
interesting.
I was a school teacher with incarcerated juvenile delinquents at the time.
Yeah,
and it was kind of must see TV for us.
Okay, that's interesting. You know, but
water cooler. You said, "Wow, did you see Boston Public last night?"
Yeah. Well, I don't want to disappoint you, Doc, but David E. Kelly is behind Big Little Lies, so I don't think he's going to go.
No doubt. And that is by far a great show. And yeah. I texted a while ago. It's like, is there going to be more Zoe Kravitz, even if it's just ASMR, you know?
All right. Well, cool. All right, Doc. Thanks, man. Have a good one.
Bye.
All right. See ya. There you go. A little Boston Legal. What about you guys? 312-981-7200. We got some texts coming in. 630 area code says, I think of Dallas, the reboots, they ended up with a cliffhanger where the person got blew up, but you didn't know if it was the actual character of Bobby Ewing's son. So you want a 2-hour movie of the Dallas reboot? Wow,
I'd watch
it. That's a delicate. Well, I watched the Dallas reboot. I thought the Dallas reboot was fun.
Yeah,
that was fun. Mark the Breadman said, "I want a Heroes movie to wrap up a fantastic series. Well, except for season 3. Yeah, that show went off the rails. Heroes went off the rails. I thought the first season was great.
My mom made me turn off the pilot almost immediately.
Why?
Because there's that one character who's got like a split personality.
Yeah.
And like she's like a cam girl. And that was in 2005. So I was in like fifth grade.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this new show's coming on. It's called Heroes. Oh, some superheroes and stuff. And I turn on, that scene's happening. And she's like, nope.
So you never got to watch it?
I watched the first season after the fact. And then when I tried to continue, I was like, oh, wow, this gets bad. This gets
bad. It's the second season's okay. It's the third season that is right. The third season, it just completely derails. I stopped watching.
Yeah.
But that first season was pretty cool, man. I thought it was pretty cool. Fastlane was the new Miami Vice that ended after only one season with an unresolved cliffhanger. Fastlane, that was with Tiffany. Let's see if I can remember this. Tiffany Thiessen and Peter Farinelli. Directed by McGee. I don't know why I know so much about this, but it was a Fox show, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, definitely a Fox show.
Yeah. Tiffany Thiessen, was she in it? Was she the girl?
Yeah.
And it was Peter Facinelli, right?
Yeah.
And I don't remember who else was in it.
Bill Bellamy.
Oh, that's right. Bill Bellamy was in it. And I remember watching the pilot and thinking it was pretty cool, but they had a ton of budget for the pilot, and Mick G directed the pilot.
Yeah, he did.
And then as the series went on, it you know, the budget, obviously, for the pilot was much bigger than for the rest of the season. So they threw everything into the pilot. And I remember thinking it was pretty cool, but I didn't watch the whole season. I didn't know it ended with a cliffhanger.
Yeah, I caught it on rerun.
Yeah.
Because it did manage to get, like, a rerun. I guess there was a dedicated enough fan base.
From Paul, who says, I would like My Name is Earl. That show was great. Yeah, My Name is Earl ended on a cliffhanger.
My dad loved that show.
That show was so funny. So funny. You know who's hilarious on that show is Jamie Presley. Jamie Presley.
Loved her.
I love her. I think she's fantastic. I love her and everything. She's great. Okay, we're going to break here, and then we want to hear from you guys. What TV shows deserve a Deadwood-style movie just for closure? 312-981-7200, and we'll get back to it after the news. Welcome back, everybody. Triple Play Thursday continues. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. It's a Thursday morning here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5 o'clock. The great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected with us on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right, here's what we're talking about. We've been doing some TV stuff this morning. We're going to continue to do that. We're talking right now about shows that deserve, you know, Deadwood fans got closure just this past Friday. And as a massive Deadwood fan, we all waited 13 years for closure on the show that was canceled, and we needed more of it. And we got it. As Deadwood fans, we got it. And then we got to thinking, well, what are the other TV shows that you would like to see get like a Deadwood-style two-hour movie just so you can get some closure and revisit those characters? You know, Brian Tellerico, a good friend of ours, wrote this piece in Vulture.com about the shows that deserve these kind of Deadwood-style movies for closure. And first one he mentions is Carnival, which was on from 2003 to 2005. And I'll tell you, you know, I've mentioned this before. Adrienne Barbeau has been to Flashback Convention a couple of times, and she's a lovely woman. She says of all the fans of her work, the most intense and the most passionate are the Carnival fans. They were very, very unsatisfied about the ending of that, about HBO canceling it. And they're kind of waiting for it. And it's the same kind of, you know, around the same kind of time period as Deadwood. Mm-hmm. And it says, Brian writes, if you put up a tent, they will come. That's a whole legion of fans, some of whom are identified as carnies. Looking at the Deadwood movie and asking, why not us too? Both cancellations came about in an era when HBO was trying to find its next big hit and axing shows with large budgets like Deadwood, Rome, and Carnival. The cult status of this two-season wonder has only grown over the 14 years since its cancellation, with fan sites, forum activity, and even something called CarnyCon. Set up during the Great Depression, Daniel Knopf's vision followed the people of a traveling carnival and weaved a deep sense of American mythology through the lives of the characters. Nick Stahl and Clancy Brown led the series as two very different men who discover that they have unusual powers. It was a moody, smart show that drew comparisons to Twin Peaks but never got its hooks into average viewers. Despite that, fans have clamored for its return for over a decade now, especially after it ended with a cliffhanger that just begs for resolution. Yeah, I liked Carnival. Yeah. I was not like a hardcore. I didn't mean like it nearly as much as I like Deadwood. But I liked it. I mean, Clancy Brown is one of my heroes. I think he's amazing. But yeah.
And that like generation of HBO shows, so like Carnival,
yeah,
Deadwood, Rome, those are like the last ones that would get canceled like a regular TV show. You know what I mean? Now I feel like HBO would just be like, okay, we'll do a final season. We'll do, you know, six episodes, yeah, five episodes just to wrap it up for enough people watching.
Yeah.
back in those days, HBO operated a little bit more like a regular television station.
You know, it's interesting because now just another one just popped into my head. We were talking about HBO crashing. They just canceled Crashing, Pete Holmes' show, which I loved.
Yeah.
And they canceled it. It was only on for two seasons. They canceled that, and it was a terrific show.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, it was open-ended. So I guess it's not been canceled long enough for me to complain and demand that they bring a movie in, because it's only been, you know, they just announced its cancellation a couple of months ago. But still, that's another show that I really, really love that HBO axed, Crashing. Next in this article is Community, which was on from 2009 to 2015. They got six seasons. Now, where's the movie? To be honest, it was an effort just to get this Dan Harmon creation to six seasons. Harmon was fired for a season. It went to a streaming service, etc. But if the show can survive that, it can get a movie across the finish line, right? The fandom around Greendale Community College and its unforgettable students was always fiercely loyal. And some of the graduates, like Donald Glover and Allison Brie, have only grown more popular since the TV school shuttered for good. Community aired on NBC for five seasons, pushed through some behind-the-scenes drama, and even had a sixth season air on something called Yahoo Screen. As an in-joke on the show produced the hashtag six seasons in a movie, and it looked like it might come true. Producers and even Harmon have talked about it, and Harmon saying that he needs to miss the Community crew before he can think about writing their reunion film. Cast members like Danny Pudi and Joel McHale were talking about how much they want to do it just last year, so it's high time. I'd like to see it. Definitely, though, Dan Harmon has to be involved, because that season when Dan Harmon was not, the season when Dan Harmon was not on that show was terrible. That the quality of that show took a nosedive when Harmon left, and I loved Community. I thought that show was great and inventive and really funny and just an incredibly funny ensemble cast. It was a return to comedy for Chevy Chase, even though he was an unbelievable jerk to work with, and the conflicts between him and Dan Harmon were, you know, insane. But it worked when it was firing on all cylinders, man. It was the funniest show on TV and clearly one of the most creative and well written. And I just think Dan Harmon is great. I think he's really great. I would love to see those characters get back together. I don't think there'd be a snowball's chance in hell of getting Chevy Chase to do it, but that's okay. They can work around him. They can do it without him. So, I would love to see that. It was a great show, and I would love to see Community come back. And the aforementioned many times Freaks and Geeks is next in this article. Picture it, in the fall of 2020, two decades after NBC canceled one of the best shows it ever had the privilege to air, the network pays whatever it takes to bring Judd Apatow and the cast back together for a reunion. There are so many ways it could be done. A 20th high school reunion seems kind of obvious, but what about a big chill version where one of the characters, whoever's too busy to be reunion, looking at you, James Franco, has died and everyone is getting together for his or her funeral? That's exactly, is that unbelievable that Brian wrote the same exact same idea as Feinberg said?
These guys are birds of a feather.
Wow, that's crazy. That's exactly what Feinberg said.
Honestly, I've wanted to ask Dan for a while if he's ever thought about or ever tried to write a TV pilot or something, because I'd be very curious.
That would be interesting.
I'd be very curious.
Yeah. Freaks and Geeks was so far ahead of its time. In a way, it wrote both adults and teenagers about adolescence that it would be a massive critical darling. It would probably find a bigger audience if NBC aired it today. And the cast remains one of the most remarkable future star factories of all time. James Franco, Linda Cardellini. By the way, Dead to Me has been renewed for a second season on Netflix.
Rock and roll.
Which is awesome, because you get to see the great Christina Applegate and Linda Cardellini act their butts off on that show. Seth Rogen, Jason Segel, Martin Starr, Ben Foster, Lizzie Kaplan, and more. It might cost money to get them back together, but it might be worth every penny. Yeah. God, that was a good show.
I was so in love with it when I discovered it.
Yeah.
Because someone's older brother had it on DVD, had the complete series, and they lent it to me. And I totally fell in love with
it. Always a great show. It was a great show. I also loved Undeclared. Same thing with Undeclared. Undeclared was a fantastic show. Fox canceled too early.
Well, it was nice to see Jason Segel playing like a jerk.
Yeah.
That was particularly funny. And another, like, Jay Baruchel was in that.
Yeah. It was a great cast, and it was a really terrific show, and yet another Apatow thing that didn't, you know, and Apatow, until 40-Year-Old Virgin, you know, Apatow did, you know, had a lot of failures before 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people forget that the Ben Stiller show was a disaster when it was on the air. But you go back and look at who wrote for that show and who was in the cast of that show, and that was an Apatow production. I mean, that was insane, the amount of talent that was on the Ben Stiller show. And that show failed. It got a second life when they reran it on MTV. And that's what they did with that's exactly what they did with My So-Called Life. A lot of people discovered My So-Called, a lot of people who didn't watch it when it was on ABC, which they should have, discovered it when they showed it again on MTV. And MTV showed the hell out of it. It was on like every day. Like I remember at one point I could watch My So-Called Life like every single day on MTV.
Yeah. I mean, I'm guessing that was during a time when MTV was trying to branch out from just being music videos.
Yeah, I mean, they were showing a lot of rerun stuff. I mean, I think they were showing Ben Stiller around the same time. Ben Stiller showed around the same time. And they had the sketch comedy. They had The State.
Which is an awesome show.
Yeah. With you know, 80% of the cast members from this town. So, that would be pretty cool. Undeclared and Freaks and Geeks. But yeah, when 40-Year-Old Virgin came out, that was it, you know, and then Apatow became one of the most, you know, powerful guys in movies and in comedy. But a lot of people, you know, you go back and you look at those three shows, the Ben Stiller, Undeclared, and Freaks and Geeks, they were great. Great shows. Gravity Falls. Now, here's a show I never watched.
Oh, man.
I've never seen an episode of.
Oh, jeez.
It's from 2012 to 2016. Alex Hirsch's brilliant Disney Channel crew. It was on Disney Channel?
Yeah, it's a cartoon.
Oh, it's a cartoon.
It's a cartoon, but it is honestly brilliant.
Wow, okay, I've never seen it. Disney Channel creation was reportedly canceled on its creator's terms, so it's a little different from other shows on this list, but we're still clamoring for more adventures of Dipper and Maple Pines and the weird happenings of the Mystery Shack.
It's literally Twin Peaks for children.
Oh, it is?
It is. But it's just so brilliantly done. I can't even believe how much I enjoyed it when it was on.
Okay. Part of the pain comes from the fact that animated hits typically go on for years and years, but there were only two seasons of Gravity Falls, a scant 40 episodes, with phenomenal voice work by Jason Ritter, Kristen Shaw, Linda Cardellini, and others. Gravity Falls is one of the smartest family shows of the 10s, a program that plays equally to kids and their parents or guardians. It ended in 2016. There have been rumors of a movie ever since. Hirsch did produce a graphic novel of new adventures, but this is a show that will only grow in popularity when people find it on Disney Plus. Hey, Mouse House, why not launch a series of movies on your new streaming service? I'll have to definitely check that out. I wasn't aware of that show, so there it is. A call out for Gravity Falls movie for closure. All right, we're going to take a break here on 720 WGN, and we want to hear from you guys. What TV shows that were taken from you and that you would love to see get a Deadwood-like TV two-hour movie? So just that you can be, there's closure involved. All right? Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. Triple Play Thursday. You made Triple Play Thursday. One artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. What was that?
That was the Greg Allman Band.
Okay.
Yes, sir. Song is called Anything Goes, and that's coming to us from Steve.
Okay. Greg Allman. Welcome back. How you doing, everybody? We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, and we are talking about television shows like Deadwood that deserve a movie. Just for closure. They were taken away from us, and we would love to see revisit those characters, get some closure like we all got to. If you're a Deadwood fan, Friday night, the broadcast of that movie was spectacular, and we waited 13 years for it, and it was great, and it was satisfying, and we would love to name some other TV shows that deserve that kind of closure. Here's Chris on WGN. Hi, Chris.
Hey, how you doing?
All right.
I got a few shows that need some movies. That innately, abruptly, rudely entered in camp.
All right.
You remember Designing Women, right?
I do remember Designing Women. I never watched it, but I do remember it.
Oh, yeah, because it was canceled in 1993.
Yeah.
Because they moved it to Friday nights.
So you want a Designing Women movie?
Yeah. So, right. You know, others, some of them did. I wish they have a reboot, like the remaining ones.
Yeah. All right.
And one more thing, it's a soap opera.
Okay.
You remember Passions?
Passions, I do, yes. Didn't watch it, but I do remember.
Yeah, I would love to see that movie. I would fight to see that movie because it ended 2008.
Yeah.
Because it was on DirecTV, and a lot of people didn't have DirecTV right. When it moved from NBC.
Right. Well, there you go. Passions. All right, so Chris wants to see Designing Women and Passions come back as a movie. There you go. Canadian Bill says it would be fun to see a Last Man on Earth movie. I totally agree with that. And so does Brian Tallarico because it's mentioned. And that show was great. That show was so great and creative and crazy. And I love Will Forte.
Mm-hmm.
I love Will Forte. Will Forte wrote the potato chip sketch. So that's, he gets, I remember the first time I saw the potato chip sketch, my ex-wife and I were watching it. One of the weird, it's Will Forte, so there's going to be weirdness involved, but like this whole, I want to be an astronaut, don't eat my potato chip, you know, and it's Sudeikis and Forte, and the guest that night, the host that night was Blake Lively, and she killed in that sketch. If you've not seen it, it's online. I know Hulu has it. It is one of the weirdest and funniest sketches of all time, and whenever anybody is asked what the funniest sketch they've ever been a part of, Sudeikis always, when they ask him, what's the funniest, what's your favorite sketch you've ever done? He said potato chip. The potato chip sketch. You don't eat other people's potato chips.
I still couldn't get behind January Jones, though, in that show.
Well, she wasn't on that show. That was
Last Man on Earth?
Oh, yeah, last time. I thought you were talking about the potato chip sketch.
Oh, yeah. No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was the best, I think it's like the best thing she's ever done.
Mad Men?
Yeah, Mad Men, but I don't think she's a particularly strong in Mad Men. She's fine in Mad Men.
Yeah.
She was, by the way, one of the worst SNL hosts in the history of SNL.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah.
I mean, it was an embarrassingly bad episode. So, Jay says, hey, Nick, The Beat, TV show with Mark Ruffalo. Oh, well, I don't know what that is. What was that? The Beat with Mark Ruffalo? The first time I remember Mark Ruffalo was in You Can Count on Me, the Kenneth Lagerin movie with Laura Linney. I don't remember him before that.
So it was The Beat was a show on UPN. In 2000.
Okay.
Starring Mark Ruffalo. And that it's like a cop show.
That was right before You Can Count on Me came out. Like right before. I think if I'm not mistaken, I think You Can Count on Me came out early 2001. Yeah, or maybe even earlier than that, maybe 2000, maybe the same year as that.
Wow, and it got canceled in like the middle of its first season. It only aired 6 episodes.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, they're
UPN, man.
Yeah.
They're bringing back some memories there.
It was right before Voyager, man.
Yeah. 847 area code says, would love to see a movie wrapping up JAG to see if Harm and Mac actually got married and which one had to resign their commission. Plus, you never pass up a chance to see Catherine Bell. I would agree with that. I would agree with that. I remember when JAG was popular. I think I've told you this before. I remember when JAG was popular, and it was on for like 15 seasons or something. And I remember flipping around the TV, and I'm like, wait a minute, JAG is still on? It's one of those shows, and there are many of these kind of shows, where they're on for 14, 13 seasons, and nobody you know watches it. I didn't know anybody who watched JAG. No one.
People in doctor's offices waiting.
And I never watched it. And I, you know, and I'm like, and I was like, well, how the hell is this thing still on? And then I remember it was at the Jewels and I was standing in line, you know, at the register, and the magazine's right by the register. And I saw that there was it was either Maxim or Stuff, one of those things. And Catherine Bell was on the cover. And I looked at it and I went, oh, that's why people are watching. Because she's extraordinarily hot, Catherine Bell. unbelievable.
Yeah, my parents watched JAG.
Yeah, everybody's parents watched
it. It was one of the few American shows that we would get in Singapore when I was living there as a kid.
Yeah.
So,
well,
we'd watch JAG, and I remember sitting there trying to watch it with them. I'm like, this is the single most boring thing I've ever seen in my life.
Well, you know what's funny is that it was one of Ron Santo's favorite TV shows of all time. I'm not kidding.
When Santo was super into JAG.
He was way into JAG.
Wow.
And we used to do a thing when the Cubs games were broadcast on WGN and Pat and Ron were in the booth. We used to do a thing called the Pat and Ron highlight reel where people would listen to the games. And whenever Pat and Ron did something hilarious, like we do with, you know, how we do with the Sunday features where people listen and then they give you the day of the time and all that stuff. So I have hours back in the office, hours and hours and hours of incredible highlights between Pat and Ron. And one of them was Ron, you know, discussing how much he loved JAG. And it's a really hilarious clip because he's, you know, they're talking about TV and he goes, what, you know, and Pat, you know, asks Ronnie, you know, like, well, what shows do you watch? He goes, I like the show JAG. And so Pat goes, JAG? He's like, yeah. You ever watch, you don't watch the show JAG? And so Ron goes, you don't watch the show JAG? And Pat goes, no, I don't know the show JAG. And he's like, oh, it's a really good show. It's a really good show. And then, like, he kind of mentions that he really likes Catherine Bell. So Ronnie mentions that he really likes Catherine Bell. And then Pat goes, what's the show? He's like, it's a really good show. So why is it called JAG? Is there a guy on the show named JAG? Is he Larry JAG? And that's what Pat said. Is he Larry JAG? And Ron goes, no, there's nobody named Larry JAG on the show. And they went on this, and it was a recurring bit where they would bring up JAG, and then, you know, Ron would come quickly to its defense and then hint that he really enjoyed Catherine Bell, like really enjoyed her.
He enjoyed her.
Yeah. Well, there's what's not to enjoy.
Yeah. I just can't get JAG.
Oh, no, he loved it. Ronnie loved JAG. So here's Trucker Rich on WGN. Hi, Rich.
Hey, good evening, Nick. Hi. I sent you a text for two programs that I thought need a two-hour ending, but I don't know if you've read them yet.
No, I haven't gotten to them yet.
All right, Jericho and Men of a Certain Age.
Oh, Men of a Certain Age. Bravo. Bravo. Oh, Jericho I never watched, but I hear is great. But man, Men of a Certain Age, oh, such a great show.
Yeah, that just ended, and it was like, what's the why?
Yeah, you know? Exactly. That's a great one. That's a great one. I would love to see a two-hour movie of Men of a Certain Age.
But the reason I called in after sending a text is you're talking about JAG. Well, I think it was about 2 weeks ago, there's NCIS Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And they brought those two characters back together again.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, he was a ship commander, and she was an investigator,
right,
for the government. So they kind of merged, and you could see them looking at each other because they played off that they were on JAG and they knew each other.
Yeah,
but they both gone their separate ways in their lives.
Yeah, well, that NCIS is a spinoff of JAG.
Right.
Yeah. So that's why they showed up. But that'll be our listener will be happy to know that there was a little closure. They can watch NCIS from last week or a couple of weeks ago.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Rich, and both of them got married to somebody else.
Oh,
so,
okay. Well, people are going to be disappointed by that. So
yeah,
right,
they let that go on that too. So
okay.
All right.
Got to hit the news. Evening. Thank you, Rich. Got to hit the news. All right. Let's take a break. News is up next. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 5 a.m. And it's Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, Triple Play Thursday. That's the Greg Allman Band right here on 720 WGN. And we have been talking about TV shows that deserve a Deadwood-style movie just so that we can have closure. A lot of shows got canceled that we were very disappointed about getting canceled, and we would love to see get some closure. Now, us Deadwood fans have got that. We got that closure last Friday with the magnificent Deadwood movie that premiered on HBO Friday night, and it was just everything you could ever hope for after waiting 13 years to get back into the Deadwood world. So what other shows do you think should have that happen? All right. Here's Roosevelt on WGN. Hi, Roosevelt.
Hey, Nick. How you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
You were making me think of a show that I couldn't figure out what the name was, but we really got hooked on it, but it only lasted 1 year. So I think this show deserves honorary mention, and that is called Philly. Now, yeah, Kim Delaney, Rick Hoffman, and Tom Everett.
Okay.
Were in it.
All right.
And my wife and I really used to enjoy that show. It's about lawyers in the city of Philadelphia. And we got hooked, and then they just, it was on ABC, by the way.
Yeah. And they just canceled it. I've never even heard of it. I like all those actors. They're all good.
Yeah. It was a fantastic show. I mean, for being on a regular channel, you know, channels.
Right.
But I think it deserves honorary mention. I don't know if anybody out there remembers that show.
All right, cool.
It was only 1 year. Thank you.
All right, Roosevelt. Thanks, buddy.
Thank you.
Philly. Can't claim that I've ever seen that show. So there you go. We got some text that just came in. 414 area code said, Kiefer Sutherland's Designated Survivor. Never watched that show. I heard, you know, sort of mixed things about Designated Survivor. So 773 area code says, Alphas on Sci-Fi ended with everyone either dead or unconscious. Will be pretty hard to do a follow-up if everybody's dead. Um, 301 area code says, just a few. True Calling. True Calling, was that Elijah Dushku?
I think so.
Because I love her.
I do remember that show, kind of.
I know that, I mean, I remember the title. I didn't watch it. But I think it was Elijah Dushku.
Let's see.
I think that was her.
Yeah, Jason Priestley.
Jason Priestley and
Eliza Dushku.
Okay. The Pretender. These are just from a 301 area code. The Passage and Whiskey Cav. Did they already cancel Whiskey Cavalier?
Oh, they shot that thing like a lame horse.
Really?
Yeah. They killed it. It's a terrible name for a show. I didn't even mind the show.
Yeah.
But that's a terrible name for it.
Yeah. Well, and I love the two leads, though. Especially, don't be canceling Noel from Felicity, man. Don't be doing that. So many shows were canceled without resolution over the years, I can't even think of them all. 219 area code, Married with Children never had an ending, it was just canceled. Well, Married with Children stayed around too long. Once they brought the kid in, again, Married with Children falls under the curse of bringing in the cute little kid to try and save a show that should be canceled. And they did. They brought in this kid named Seven. I don't know if you remember, but they brought in the little cute, little smart aleck kid.
Kid's name was Seven?
Seven. Brought him in. And the show was on its last legs anyway. But I'll tell you something. When that show was on firing on all cylinders, it was great. I don't care what anybody says. I love Married with Children. And I think Ed O'Neill is a genius. And Katie Sagal. I think everybody on that show is great. I got to meet Amanda Bierce last year.
Oh, nice.
At Flashback. I told you the story, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Where the screen
coming
collapsed
down,
she just got up and did 20 minutes while they were blowing the screen back up. She's fantastic and is such a sweetheart and so, so funny. But yeah, Married with Children, I wouldn't mind seeing a reunion of that, but I don't, you know, I think the show was on a little too long.
Also, we're getting a few texts coming in. Designated Survivor got picked up by Netflix.
Oh, it did?
Yeah. So
The Kiefer man is back in business. All right, so Netflix, it went to Netflix. So that listener out there who wanted Designated, you got it.
There it is.
608 said, I would love to see an update of Sports Night. The only bad thing is that Robert Guillaume passed away. That's true. He was a major part of that show. Yeah, that was one of Sorkin's first sort of like reasonably successful efforts. All right, here in the article that Brian wrote, and I totally agree with this, Hannibal.
Oh, my God.
That show, again, here's the thing. I can't stand any of the Thomas Harris movies. I like Manhunter. I like the Michael Mann. I like Manhunter. I can't stand Silence of the Lambs. Well, Hannibal was hilarious because it was so stupid.
Yeah.
You know,
is that the one where he's eating the brain?
Yeah. No, it was Julianne Moore took over for Jodie Foster. So that's a stupid movie. Hannibal Rising was unwatchable.
Yeah.
The Red Dragon, the remake of Manhunter, Red Dragon, and Brett Ratner?
It was Brett Ratner, and it was Edward Norton.
Edward Norton.
Was Will.
And it was in it. Philip Seymour Hoffman was in it. A great cast. Awful. So I'm not a fan of any of that stuff at all. Manhunter to me doesn't feel like that. It feels like a Michael Mann movie.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
The Inagata DeVita shootout is so cool.
It's fantastic. And and Brian Cox, the best besides Mills Mikkelsen, he's the best.
Yeah.
He's the best Hannibal. He's better than Anthony Hopkins. Brian Cox in that movie is better than Anthony Hopkins was. But so when this series was about to premiere, I was like, oh man, but it's Brian Fuller. So I saw Brian Fuller's name on it and looked at the rest of the cast, and I happen to adore Carolyn DiVerna. Carolyn DiVerna was on one of my favorite shows of all time. Oh, speaking of which, I would love to see closure on that, Wonder Falls, which is one of my favorite. Have you ever seen Wonder Falls?
I did, yeah.
One of my favorite shows of all time.
It was a fascinating show.
And they canceled it. Fox canceled it, and I went nuts. And so I went on a campaign on the air. I got a Fuller on the air. I got Carolyn DiVerna on the air. We started a petition. And then I don't know if I'm even remotely partially responsible, but the whole season is now available on DVD with extras. And it came out soon after our campaign. Because that show is so imaginative and so funny, and she's so good on it. And, you know, like a lot of Brian Fuller's shows, it got canceled before it should have.
Yeah.
But
he was Dead Like Me, Wonder Falls,
yeah.
Pushing Daisies,
yeah.
Hannibal, and then he most recently did American Gods and then the new Star Trek, which
yeah.
I'm pretty sure he's more or less
yeah.
walked away from the new Star Trek.
American Gods got really goofy.
Have you read the book?
No.
It's a kind of a goofy book in a way.
Well, Gaiman hates everything that's based on his work. Doesn't he?
I'd have to see how he feels about Coraline.
Oh, well, yeah.
Because I think that's the best adaptation they've ever done of anything
from the director of Monkey Bone. and Christmas, Nightmare Before Christmas. The great Henry Selick. Well, anyway, Hannibal. When Hannibal started, I was like, all right, I'm only watching this because of Carolyn DiVerna and Brian Fuller. And oh my God, was Hannibal good. It was so creepy and so good. And I can't believe they got away with what they got away with on NBC.
I remember the first episode of season two, where all the people are stitched together in the grain silo.
Oh.
Oh my God!
No, I mean, I'm telling you, I would watch it and go, how how is this on NBC?
Well, you remember they had that episode with Molly Shannon that got pulled.
Yeah, well, because of the timing of it.
Yeah, because of the timing of it.
Yeah.
Hell, I'm surprised that they even kept it in any way.
Well, I can't believe that it got a third season. I'm amazed that it got a third season because I thought for sure after season two, and nobody was really watching it. It wasn't like the ratings were through the roof or anything. There were a hardcore group of fans, including me, who would watch it and just be blown away by it. And the acting, the way it was, the photography was beautiful. It was like a film. Like you were watching a movie every week.
That was an HBO series on network.
That's exactly what it was.
Oh, network.
Exactly. And they got away with it, too.
They totally did. Because they wanted to compete, I feel like. I feel like NBC was like, we got to do something about Netflix. We got to do something about
HBO. It's so good. It was so good. And I'm genuinely, unbelievably, surprisingly good. Like, I was like, because like I said, the Thomas Harris material, not a fan of at all. I loved every episode of Hannibal. I thought it was amazing.
For a while, there have been rumors swirling around because the back catalog, those three seasons the rights to the show got bought by Netflix outright. So NBC doesn't own it anymore.
Right.
Amazon has it.
Yeah.
So Brian Fuller has hinted at, suggested that they want to do a fourth and final series. And it would be Silence of the Lambs, and they would introduce Clarice Darling and all that kind of stuff.
It says here, Brian writes, on one hand, the fact that a show as dark and brilliant as Brian Fuller's Hannibal on NBC that was on NBC is a something of a miracle, especially for three whole seasons. On the other hand, we need more Dr. Lecter. Mads Mikkelsen stepped into the iconic shoes of Hannibal Lecter and made the character his own. Justice Fuller weaved elements of the Thomas Harris novels and the films adapted from them into his violent, beautiful vision. After its cancellation in 2015, there were rumors that other networks would pick it up or even produce a film. If we bet on one show on this list that could actually return, it would be this one. It would be Hannibal. And that's mostly not just wishful thinking. Earlier this year, Mickelson revealed that Fuller was still working on something related to Hannibal, a possible fourth season, which would be a reworking of Clarice Starling and The Silence of the Lambs. Yeah, amazing show. Just an amazing show. I would love to see that show come back. I would love it. Okay, we are talking about TV shows that you would like to see come back like Deadwood did with a two-hour movie, just so we can get some closure. 312-981-7200. Let's break here for the weather. And here's your weather from the WGN Chicago Weather Center. Today, warmest readings far west will be near 80 degrees, but it'll be cooler lakeside. For tomorrow, partly sunny, warmer inland highs will peak out in the low 80s. Saturday, warmer highs will reach 80, winds will restrict the highs to the upper 60s in close to Lake Michigan. Sunday, highs in the 70s inland, 60s along the lake, chance for scattered showers and thunderstorms at night. And then Monday, cooler, highs in the low 70s. Inland, but the lake breezes will continue to cool the shoreline. Low 60s are likely there. It's currently 58 degrees at O'Hare, 61 at Midway, and 57 at the lakefront. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back, and we'll wrap up the topic of shows that we would like to see come back for some closure with a movie or so. And then we're going to get into some short-lived and easily forgotten 1980s TV shows. So we want to jump in on that. And that's all coming up right after we break here. No, I'm no angel. This is one of the most ridiculous songs ever written. Let me show you my tattoo. Also, every time I hear this song, which is not very often, every time I hear this song, I think of a sketch that they did on SNL. Josh Brolin was the host. And at this point, Amy Poehler was very, very, very pregnant. And they did this bit where they were in a bar. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
And this song is playing, and she's like sexually dancing and trying to get across the room to James Brolin, who's got like a mullet and a bad mustache. Now, every time I hear this song, I think of a very pregnant Amy Poehler being unbelievably hilarious, trying to be sexy, you know, being like clearly 9 months pregnant. That's the only thing I think of. And of course, the lyric of "Let me show you my tattoo," which I always thought was one of the most ridiculous lyrics of all time.
I mean, Greg Allman, amazing songwriter, amazing musician, not accused of being the greatest lyricist of all
time. No, no. But I mean, the Allman Brothers, man, I mean, the legendary. They're all those guys.
Right? As my longtime girlfriend thought until, like, I don't know, 2 weeks
ago. Not Allman?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I thought it was the Allman Brothers. I was like, are you nuts?
Are you nuts? Nice job. You drank your Henny Youngman juice this morning.
Yeah, 7 years, her and I.
Oh, wow. All right. So, anyway, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720. Coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. We are about to wrap up this conversation about TV shows that we would like to see come back with a Deadwood-type movie for closure. And then we're going to jump into the world of weird, easily forgotten, short-lived, and goofy 1980s TV series. If you remember any from the 80s, you can call us or text us at 312-981-7200. And we'll jump into that. Here's Rich on WGN. Go ahead, Rich.
Hi, Nick. Good morning.
Hi.
I had three that popped into my head. I don't know if they're on the list or, but they should be because they should be mentioned. One of them was called Huff, which was pretty short-lived, was starred Hank Azaria.
I remember that. I remember that show now, yeah.
Yeah, really good cast in that. And they had that. The young guy Yeltsin from the Star Trek.
Okay.
He died. The guy who played Chekhov.
Anthony Yeltsin, yeah.
Yeah, he was in that too. Yeah, really good. Another one was Boss, which just killed me.
That was shot here. A lot of my friends were employed because of that show, and when it got canceled, everybody was upset. Kelsey Grammer, that was a really good show.
Yeah, it was a fantastic show. And then the last one I wanted to bring up was the Sarah Chronicle, the Santa Sarah Chronicle
The Sarah Connor Chronicles.
Connor Chronicles, thank you.
Right, yeah. Well, Rich, you got a feature movie coming out with that. That's going to wrap that whole thing up. The next Terminator movie is all about that.
Oh, is it based on the TV?
It's where you see, it's where Sarah Connor is now. Like they have.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
I liked about that show so much was I didn't really think that anybody could, you know, take over the role of Sarah Connor from Linda Hamilton. But yeah. I thought Alita Headley did a really good job.
Yeah, I mean, I never watched the show. I watched it a couple times. I wasn't really that into it. But Linda Hamilton is back in the new Terminator.
Yeah,
movie.
I saw that. Yeah. So, Cameron, whatever, is the new.
Well, he didn't direct it. Cameron's just co-produced it. But Schwarzenegger's in it, and yeah. So that'll be coming out. I think it comes out this summer. Yeah. All right. Thanks, Rich.
You bet.
Take care. Bye-bye. I think it looks terrible.
Yeah. I think they lost the vision of what made Terminator great.
The last good Terminator movie was the third one. Everything after that has been crap.
I mean,
the third one's good, man. The third one's good. That fight in the bathroom where they're getting thrown around through urinals and stuff is fantastic. And that chase scene on the cherry picker.
That's pretty cool.
That's all practical, man. They were driving cars through buildings like that. And I thought Jonathan Mostow directed that movie.
Yeah.
You ever see Breakdown?
Yeah.
With Kurt Russell?
Yeah.
That movie rules.
I think it's adequately done.
Well, look, it's not as good as the first two. Okay. No. I understand that. Yeah. And I still think the first one's the best. As much as everybody loves the second one, the first one's the best. But yeah, I still like the third one. Everything after it has been unwatchable, like unwatchable bad. 708 area code says it can never be done, but the original Chaos, right before Patrick Swayze died, he was filming a show in Berwyn about an undercover cop called The Beast. My friend Mike appeared on an episode of The Beast, said that Patrick Swayze was one of the nicest guys he's ever worked with. And he was sick at that time, and so there's no way you can bring The Beast back. But that was a really good show. Swayze was really good on it, and my buddy Mike was on an episode. He had some of the best work he's ever done on TV, my buddy Mike. It's a really juicy, juicy role. Yeah, 262 area code says we need a 3-hour movie of Quark. No, we don't need a 3-hour movie of Quark. Richard Benjamin sci-fi comedy, Quark. That's a 70s movie, or a 70s TV show, so that's not going to be part of the conversation when we get into these easily forgotten, you know, 80s shows. Not sure if you mentioned it, NBC had a show called Damien that I thought was really good. Was it related to The Omen? To the Omen series? Because in The Omen, they had a TV series for The Omen, which was terrible. 847 area code says, I'd love to see some more Sliders or Quantum Leap, as long as they are not as bad as the revival of The X-Files, which is one of my favorite TV show of all time. Listen, short revival of The X-Files from a couple of years ago was really disappointing, and I happen to be a huge fan of The X-Files. I love The X-Files. And I'll say it, I loved the second movie. I thought the second movie, I want to believe, was great. Love the first movie. Everybody loves the first X-Files movie. But the second X-Files movie came out, it was like, why are you doing this? Because it was like 10 years after the show was canceled. Mm-hmm. And by that point, I mean, you know, the problem with The X-Files was when Mulder and Scully were gone, you don't continue the show.
No,
I don't care how much you like the T-1000. You don't continue the show.
Just a heads.
So, yeah, I enjoyed the both of the movies, but the reboot was bad.
Yeah, and that Damien show, the one I found was not on NBC. It was on A&E.
Okay,
and it was. It's kind of like the Bates Motel,
right?
Was to Psycho as Damien is to The Omen.
Right. All right. Somebody said the Santa Clarita Diet should get a wrap-up. I agree. I'm so disappointed that they canceled that show. I thought it was really funny and really great zombie stuff in it, too. How about Terriers? Did you ever watch Terriers on FX?
Oh, with... what's his name? Wasn't it like...
Donald Logue.
Donald Logue. He's great.
Yeah, I love Donald Logue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was disappointing.
Yeah, so that got canceled. People want to see Terriers. All right, here's what we're going to do. We got a break, and we've got the news coming up, and we're doing live coverage when President Trump starts to speak at the 75th commemoration of D-Day. We're going to run that live. So we're keeping an eye on what's going on right now. And we're covering it in the newsroom. Vic is in there on top of it all. So we're going to take a quick break. The news is coming up. And then after the news, we'll jump into short-loved and easily forgotten 1980s TV series right here on WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above downtown Chicago. We're here till 5 a.m. We're going to jump into the topic of short-lived and easily forgotten 1980s TV series. And we're keeping an eye on what's going on in Normandy right now. Vic is in the newsroom. And as soon as President Trump begins speaking, we shall air it live right here on 720 WGN. So we're keeping an eye on what's happening there. And you'll get to hear it. Stay tuned right here on 720 WGN. So there you go. All right. Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. Who requested the who?
Who? That was listener Tom.
Okay.
Want to hear that one. So we'll have some more who coming
there
up next.
There we go. All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Short-lived and easily forgotten 1980s TV series. Anybody have some favorites from the 80s that were dumb? Let's see if we can remember some of these. Someone says, who wrote this on the Real Rundown, says, I love writing about the Saturday morning shows of my childhood and invite you to walk along the 70s memory lane. This is a brief look at 28 short-lived and easily forgotten television shows from the 80s. Some of these shows actually had potential. Why they never found their core audience is a bit of a mystery. Others, after watching an episode or two, it makes the viewer wonder how these shows ever even got made or put into production to begin with. How many of these do you remember? 312-981-7200. Tim Conway and Ace Crawford, Private Eye. We talked about this when he passed away. I watched it. It's a short-lived, it was only aired for five episodes. It aired on CBS from March 15th, 1982 to April 12th, 1983. Tim was Ace Crawford, a private detective who was an ace when it came to the business of detecting, or it appears, but in reality had no skills at all. All of his successes were brought by dumb luck and fortuitous accidents. Assisting Joe on his adventures was Bumbling Toomey, played by Joe Rigolabuto, an accountant by trade who idolizes Ace. His favorite hangout was The Shanty, a wharfside bar owned by Inch, played by Billy Barty. Perhaps the most popular little person in the history of entertainment, Billy Barty. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever you think of little people in entertainment, the first name that comes into my mind is Billy Barty.
For me, it's Vern. Vern Troyer or Warwick Davis.
Yeah.
Both fantastic.
Ace's girlfriend, Luann, was Shara Dainsand. And rounding out the cast was Lieutenant Fanning, played by Dick Christie, a police officer who is just as awed by Ace's luck. The Sam Spade takeoff did little to impress critics, and some felt that it was kind of a ripoff of the Maxwell Smart character. He admitted that the show needed canned laughter to help audiences know where to laugh. That's what Conway said. Desi Arnaz Jr. and Chuck Wagner in Automan. Automan? I don't remember this at all. Automan, 13-episode series that starred Desi Arnaz Jr. as Walter Nabicker, a computer expert who worked for the police department as a programmer, but his real dream was to be a street cop. Since his superiors felt he wasn't suited for such work, he instead developed Automan, played by Chuck Wagner, a computer-generated crime fighter who was able to come off the computer screen into the real world. Automan was Walter's alter ego. Wow.
Yeah, from the producers of Tron.
No.
Yep, and if you saw pictures of it right now, you'd be like, "Oh, of course it is." It looks like it's an offshoot of Tron.
It says here critics compared the show to Disney's film Tron. It was produced by Glenn A. Larson, who never seemed to get a lot of respect from critics. Every superhero has their limits and weaknesses, and since Automan was computer-generated, he would fade out during the day when cities' electrical usage would rise.
And you can actually, I'm looking at this right now, you can purchase the complete series of Automan right
now. Wow. I think I need to see that.
I think, let me see, it might be in stunning HD.
Automan with Desi Arnaz Jr.
Oh my God.
This is something I believe I need to see. There's no question about it.
Yeah, it appears to just be DVD, but you can get the stunning complete series
of Automan. Oh, man.
Your birthday's coming up, right?
Yeah, it's a month away, man. All right, how about this? Michelle Pfeiffer in B.A.D. Cats, Bad Cats. Nick Donovan, played by Asher Browner. And O.C. James, played by Steve Hanks, are former race car drivers who are hired by the LAPD because of their superior driving skills. They are to become members of the newly formed BAD, Bad Cats Division, which stands for Burglary Auto Detail, Commercial Auto Thefts. Joining them in their fight to stop car thieves is Officer Samantha Jensen, played by a young Michelle Pfeiffer. The series ran for 10 episodes in 1980, and it was a mid-season replacement. And then Asher Browner originated the role of Roy DeLuca on the soap opera General Hospital from 78 and 79. So that's Michelle Pfeiffer in 1980. That was the same year as Hollywood Nights. Hollywood Nights, which was her first movie. So it all started in 1980, and she still had Grease 2 to look forward to.
Oh my God.
We're gonna bowl tonight. Adrian Zmed. What was the lead's name? He was an Australian dude who Maxwell Caulfield? Was that his name? Maxwell Caulfield? He was an Australian like blonde haired guy. He and Michelle Pfeiffer were the two leads.
Oh yeah.
Is it Maxwell Caulfield?
Yep. And it was flipped, right? Where she was kind of like the greaser.
Yeah.
And he was just a little Australian.
He's an Australian. I'm new.
Kangaroos and such.
Who directed it? I know it wasn't. Randall Cluzar did the first one.
Yeah, it was Patricia Birch.
We're going to bowl tonight.
Well, she was best known perhaps for The Stepford Wives in 2004.
Oh, she did the remake of The Stepford Wives with Nicole Kidman and Will Ferrell?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. That was a terrible movie.
Yeah.
Wow.
That is. Whew.
The highlight of her career. We're going to bowl tonight.
My goodness.
Now, how about this? Beyond Westworld. Oh. So this predates the big HBO show that I watch and I don't understand at all. Beyond Westworld began its run on CBS on March 5th, 1980, and it lasted till March 19th, 1980. The Delos Corporation manufactured robots that run amok in the feature films Westworld and Future World. The plot of this small screen series had a mad scientist played by Simon Quaid, played by James Wainwright, taking control of the robots and planning to use them in a plot to rule the world. So in steps John Moore, played by Jim McMullen, security chief for Delos. And it's his job to stop Quaid. This series disappeared quickly with only 5 episodes. It also featured the lovely Connie Selica, who did not appear in the pilot. Notable guest stars include Denny Miller, Christopher Connolly, and George Takei, and Rene Aberjuan. Aberjuan.
Gesundheit.
Yeah. It became available on DVD in 2014, if you want to see Beyond Westworld.
Yeah, I'm picking that up.
You can compare it to what they're doing on HBO right now. Oh, this next one I totally remember. I totally remember this show, and I watched it too. Hal Linden and Harry Morgan in Black's Magic. Alexander Black, played by Hal Linden, was a magician who liked to solve crimes with the help of his con artist father, played by Harry Morgan. The show ran from January 5th, 1986 to May 7th, 1986, with a grand total of 13 episodes. It's reminiscent of the old 70s series, The Magician, that starred the late Bill Bixby. I used to love The Magician. I loved Bill Bixby. Loved him. I thought he was the best. I'm talking pre-Hulk Bill Bixby. Loved him. Courtship of Eddie's father. He was great. And The Magician. I loved The Magician. The series was meant to be a mid-season replacement, but NBC had shows that were doing so well in the ratings that finding a place for the series was difficult. Jim Steinmeier, who created many of Doug Henning's illusions, came up with the illusions in the series. Black's Magic was created by Richard Levinson, William Link, and Peter Fisher, who would later give us Murder, She Wrote. After Barney Miller ended, Lyndon didn't want to do another series, as most of the things offered to him were very similar in personality to that of Miller, so he took the role because it was so different. And after Morgan's series After MASH was canceled, he intended on doing very little acting and certainly had no desire to work on a series again. But when he was sent the script for the show, he loved it, citing it was different than anything he had ever worked on before. Black's Magic. I totally remember that show. I watched that one. All right. Let's take a break here, folks. Got some weather. We'll do some commercials, and then we'll come back. We'll talk more about forgotten and easily forgotten and short-lived 1980s TV shows. So, yeah, more Who right there for Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. 312-981-7200. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio. We're discussing some 80s TV series that were short-lived and easily forgotten. Some of them were good. Some of them were terrible. Some of them were just downright goofy. All right, talk about this. Sean Cassidy in Breaking Away. And I do remember this because it was terrible, and it was a TV version of one of my favorite movies, Breaking Away, which is truly one of my favorite movies. And I remember I couldn't believe it was Sean Cassidy would take over the role. Sean Cassidy gained teen idol status as Joe Hardy on the Hardy Boys' Nancy Drew Mysteries. He took on the role of Dave Stoller, a guy who loves bicycle racing in the series Breaking Away, inspired by the 79 feature film of the same name. The series may have done little better than it did if it hadn't been caught up in the 1980 Screen Actors Guild strike. And because of it, it didn't start production until late in the fall. While ABC had publicized it heavily, audiences didn't seem to notice it, and it came on the air, and it was pulled from the schedule with only 8 episodes, 7 of which were shown. It ran from November 1990 to January 81. Cassidy didn't see the film before Cassidy didn't even see the film before signing on to work on the series. He didn't want to allow his take on Dave Stoller to be influenced by the way Dennis Christopher portrayed him in the movie. The film was filmed in Athens, Georgia. His co-stars were Tom Wiggins, Tom Bray, and Jackie Earle Haley, who actually appeared in the movie. By this time, Cassidy had given up on touring with his musical career, although he had released the album Wasp and speculated that he should tour somewhat to promote it. Barbara Barry, Jackie Earle Haley, John Ashton reprised their roles from the feature film. Cassidy was proud of the show and how it dealt with human issues and relationships, and it had no gimmicks. So, how about this? 847 says, 847, "Hello, Larry was a short-lived and obscure, but nobody remembers it but me. I had a crush on the girl. I can't remember her name. Do you know Kim Richards?" That would be Kim Richards. "Hello, Larry, McLean Stevenson. It was notoriously considered one of the worst sitcoms in the history of television." And yeah, that was Kim Richards. She was in the Witch Mountain, Escape to Witch Mountain movies. She was in Tough Turf, T-U-F-F Turf. "We walk the night." Yeah, Kim Richards.
You made me play that song on air.
She's also in Assault on Precinct 13. She's the little girl with the ice cream cone who gets shot by the gang members.
Wait, I thought that was...
It's Kim Richards.
It's Kim Richards.
Yeah. Her sister Kyle Richards is the girl who's babysat in Halloween. So they were in those movies. They were in those movies back to back. Now they're Beverly Hills Real Housewives. They're Real Housewives.
Really?
Yeah. They're nuts. They're both nuts now. Kim Richards was a massive crush for me in the 70s. And they both appeared in great John Carpenter movies. Kim Richards was in Assault on Precinct 13 and notoriously shot by Frank Doubleday, who played Romero in Escape from New York. And then Kyle Richards was the girl that was being babysat.
Do you remember what the name of the girl was in Assault on Precinct 13?
Penny?
Or was it Julie?
Julie? Was it Julie?
Played by Nancy Loomis.
No, Nancy Loomis.
Really?
Nancy Loomis is, she's the one of the babysitters in Halloween, man. She's much older than that. Julie was trapped in the, she's the brunette babysitter. She's the one who gets killed in the car in Halloween.
Oh, so Nancy Loomis was like the...
She was the slutty one who was... Yeah. And I know P.J. Souls was a slutty one. But she's the one who goes... She gets stuck in the laundry room.
Okay.
In Halloween, and Kyle Richards has to come out and you know...
Yeah, no, it's Kathy. That's it. There she is.
Kathy.
Kim Richards.
That's Kim
Kathy
Richards.
Who gets plugged.
Yeah, she gets shot. And it was considered one of the most controversial. I mean, that was almost... It almost got the movie an X rating. Because nobody killed... like you don't kill like a seven-year-old kid. In graphic nature like that.
Yeah, for really no reason. That was the thing.
Yeah, that's the thing. She just walks up, hey, I asked for sprinkles.
I shouldn't laugh at that, but it's kind of funny.
It's crazy. And I just think that detail, that both of those sisters appeared in Carpenter movies back-to-back, both kind of iconic roles in those movies, and now they're nuts. They're completely nuts on the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. They're both insane. I think Kim's even a little bit more insane than Kyle, but it's your typical, you know, Beverly Hills housewife stuff. So, let's see. Here's Ike on WGN. Go ahead, Ike.
Hey, Nick, how's it going with you,
all
man?
All right.
There was this one show I remember when I was a kid. It was a Canadian TV show, but it would come on late nights on CBS. It had much more viewings in America on CBS at late night. It was called Night Heat.
Yeah, I remember that show.
Yeah, it was they filmed it in Canada, but it made it look like New York. And what's cool about it, they always filmed it at night. They had cases that would last through the whole night.
Right. All right. Yeah, you'd like to see that one. All right, Ike. Thanks, man.
No problem.
All right, Night Heat. How about 30-something? And you want to bring 30-something back?
No, man.
Yeah, but right now they're 60-something, aren't they? Wouldn't they be like they would be like 60-something at this point?
That I'd watch that
with that cast. I think, right? That was in the late 80s, right? That show, 30-something? Yeah, that was like late 80s. So,
yeah, 87. 87 to 91 was okay. When it ran.
All right. Just in Time with Tim Matheson and Patricia Callamber. It was a short-lived ABC sitcom from 1988. I don't remember that. Of course, I love Tim Matheson. He's my, you know, contrary to popular opinion, the funniest performance in Animal House is Tim Matheson.
Otter.
He's the best. It's the funniest performance in the movie. And I know, listen, Belushi rules in it. It's iconic. I love him. The funniest performance in that movie is belongs to Tim Matheson. So... Leanne says, hey, Nick, I love listening to you. Thank you. I loved Riptide. Oh, yeah, Riptide. And, of course, Hardcastle and McCormick. Hardcastle and McCormick was Brian Keith and the dude from Cujo who played he played D. Wallace's husband. Oh, I can't remember his name, but he's the husband, the dude from Cujo. D. Wallace is cheating on him. Daniel?
All right, Brian Keith and
is there a Daniel?
Daniel Hugh Kelly?
Daniel Hugh Kelly, that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was in it.
And as ex-con and race car driver, Mark Skid McCormick.
Yeah, that's right. I watched Hardcastle and McCormick when it first came out. I loved it. I remember loving it. I mean, I grew up watching Brian Keith. I love Brian Keith because Brian Keith was in Family Affair, and that was a show that I watched as a kid pretty religiously. Sebastian Cabot, Johnny Whitaker. I loved that show when I was a kid. And so I really was a fan of Brian Keith. You know what Brian Keith is great in?
What's that?
Sharky's Machine. The Burt Reynolds. You ever seen Sharky's Machine?
No, I've not.
Oh! You have to see Sharky's Machine, dude. It's one of the greatest Burt Reynolds movies of all time. He directed it, too. You got to see it. It's unbelievable.
Sharky's Machine.
Sharky's Machine. It's fantastic. Seriously, you got to see Sharky's Machine.
All right.
He introduced the world to Rachel Ward, man. You can thank Burt Reynolds for Rachel Ward. And it's Charles Durning is in it. Richard Libertini. It's fantastic. It is a great... Henry Silva plays the psycho. Oh, it's so good.
What the hell is this?
You got to see Sharky's Machine, man. 1981. It's one of my favorite Burt Reynolds movies of all time. Seriously, of all time.
And Tom Sharky.
Yeah, that's his machine. It's all the guys. All the guys. He gets busted down to Vice. And so, you know, all the guys in Vice, they all work together to solve this crime, you know. And there might Earl Holliman is in it.
Okay, this is these character names are, you know, understandably ridiculous. Frisco.
Yeah.
Arch Domino. But nothing catches me more than Henry Silva as William Billy Score Scarelli.
Yeah. He's the crazy hitman. Well, Domino is her she's a call girl. Domino is her call girl name. So you got to see Sharky's Machine. Okay, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're still keeping track on what's happening in Normandy right now. And we will cut away and present live to you when Trump begins to speak. And that'll be coming up. But the news is coming up right after this. So did David Caruso say something smart? Is that what just happened? David Caruso just made a pun?
Well, good old engineer Bob Fukuda did. I don't know. I think he said something to me, and then I just had to hit it.
And then he had to put the sunglasses on. You ever watch those YouTube compilations of the David Caruso from NCIS?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it's absolutely hilarious. It's like, well, maybe he's not dead. Yeah! And they've got, like, somebody had a lot of time on their hands and did, like, 90 of them in a row. And there's always sunglasses. There's always, like, sort of, like, he's either putting them on or taking them off. Well, I don't think he's got a partner anymore. Yeah! It's the most ridiculous. That's what I think of every time. And unfortunately, it's such a great song. But every time I hear that part of that song, I think of David Caruso going, perhaps he shouldn't have had that second hot dog. Yeah!
The victim was found with 52 playing cards in his mouth. Well, I guess he won 52 pickup.
Yeah! That's very entertaining, by the way. It's on YouTube. There's somebody put like an hour of them together. Just back to back to back to back to back to back. So, welcome back, everybody. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we're getting close to President Trump speaking on the anniversary of D-Day in Normandy. We're keeping an eye on that. As soon as he speaks, we will cut away and bring that to you live. So we're keeping an eye on that. But let's get back to the conversation that we were having about short-lived or seldom-seen TV shows. Let's see. We were talking about Hardcastle and McCormick. 630 area code, Small Wonder. Small Wonder. I always thought Small Wonder was weird. I would watch it. I thought the little girl, like the robot stuff and the little girl was just a little weird for me. Jay says, hey, Nick, I recall a cool 1980s TV show, Voyager, with John Eric Huxham. It was a sci-fi thriller similar to 1960s Time Tunnel. I remember Voyagers. Chris wants Baby Boom to come back. Well, I forgot they even made a TV series out of that. It was Diane Keaton, Harold Ramis was in that movie. And they made a TV series out of it. Look it up, because who was in that, Tom? The TV version. Because the movie was Harold Ramis and Diane Keaton. An early Nancy Meyers film, actually. But I don't remember. I forgot that they made a TV series out of it.
So you had Kate Jackson.
No! Kate Jackson was in it?
As J.C. Wyatt. Yeah, from Charlie's Angels.
Charlie's Angels, yeah.
Yeah.
Or The Rookies, if you're really old.
Joy Behar?
Joy Behar was in it?
Yeah, as Helga von Haupt.
Oh, wow.
I didn't know Joy Behar acted.
Oh, yeah.
I thought she just did The View and that was it.
Oh, no, she's a stand-up.
I had no idea.
Yeah. She's a stand-up comedian. I guess that's how she got the gig. She was going to be the funny one or the stand-up-y one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, on The View. All right, how about this one? Jerry Reed and Jeffrey Scott in Concrete Cowboys. Jerry Reed and Tom Selleck, before his Magnum days, starred in the TV movie Concrete Cowboys back in 79. It was popular enough to inspire a short-lived TV series that starred Jerry Reed as J.D. Reed. Oh, that's imaginative. Jerry Reed as J.D. Reed. What, so we won't forget his character's name? Let's just... Jeffrey Scott, who took over Selleck's role as Will Eubanks. The series was about two cowboys who, instead of riding horses on the open range, roamed across the countryside in their beat-up camper looking for adventure. That's fantastic. They made most of their money gambling, but when they had a run of bad luck, they would pick an occasional job, which usually took the fun, and then the fun took place. Critics said the series was merely an attempt to update the old Route 66 from the 1960s. It started in February 7th, 1981, and only lasted until March 21st, 1981, with a total of six episodes. Jerry Reed, a country music legend, wrote and performed the theme Breakin' Loose. The series is yet to be released on DVD, but you can find the television movie that inspired the series available. Jerry Reed, man. Smokey and the Bandit.
Love it.
Speaking of a tie to the great Burt Reynolds. All right. You know what? Why don't we take a break here, Tom, just so we can get our commercials in, because we're not sure when exactly the president is going to speak, but we want to make sure we get our commercials in before that happens. So we're going to take a quick break right now, and I'll give you the weather really quick. So we're taking a bit of an early break here. Man, I wish this was earlier. UFO is one of my favorite bands of all time. Who requested the UFO?
You can thank David for that. I also feel bad that we couldn't get it in the full triple play because UFO rocks.
They're one of the best bands ever. You know the live album, Strangers in the Night?
No? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
My favorite live album of all time. I think it's the best live album ever recorded right here in Chicago at the Amphitheater. I had a ticket for that show. And my parents wouldn't let me go because I had 103 fever. So I missed it.
Imagine seeing UFO with 103.
I don't care. I wanted to get
been,
it. Yeah.
Well, and it would have been amazing. You would have been sweating. You wouldn't know which way is which.
I mean, I ended up seeing UFO, but I could have been there the night that they recorded that record, which is one of the greatest live albums, and I couldn't go. I was so mad.
That's wild.
I was so mad. But anyway, they recorded it, and it's the best live album of all time. God, I love UFO.
Better than Cheap Trick live at Budokan?
Budokan is right up there.
Pretty much every record recorded at Budokan is pretty great.
And Allman Brothers, one of the greatest live albums of all time.
Fillmore.
I got to go with Strangers in the Night. I think that album is unbelievable. Okay, we're keeping an eye on what's going on in Normandy right now. And the minute that the president gets up to speak, we will jump right in. And coming up, again, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. I also want to mention, since we might not be able to tell you guys what's coming up on the show tomorrow, because normally at the very end of the show we get to plug what's happening, but we don't know timing-wise if that's going to work out for us or not. So I just want to mention that tomorrow on Friday we'll have over all of our regular Friday features, Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, You Big Dummy, and it'll be Fly Jams Friday. Plus we'll have members from the Brightside Theater on to discuss their production of Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, and it is a tradition for them to come on the morning that their show opens. Right after their tech week.
They're crazy.
I know.
I love it.
But it's a tradition. But they do it every single production. Whenever we have the Brightside Theater on, they come on the morning of their opening night. And we will talk to them and cast members and the artistic director of Brightside Theater. Always fun to talk to those guys. And they're doing the musical Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. And then, of course, Herb Weisbaum is going to join us. He's our consumer man, and he will answer any and all of your consumer questions and concerns and needs. And we'll talk about all the consumer news. So Herb Weisbaum will be with us, the Brightside Theater, and all the regular Friday features. Just wanted to make sure we got that in before we leave this morning. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. All right, we're talking about the forgotten TV shows of the 80s. How about Scott Bakula in Gung Ho? I wasn't even aware that they made a movie. I'm assuming based on the Ron Howard Michael Keaton movie, Gung Ho.
That is a yes. That's a Texas size 10-4.
Scott Bakula. Well, this means that Dan Shigrew needs to find this because he loves Scott Bakula. You know what kills me about that? Dan, my old producer, Dan Shigrew, never saw Men of a Certain Age.
Really?
Yeah, never saw it.
No, that's top tier Bakula.
It's unbelievable Bakula. But he was a Quantum Leap freak, Dan.
Yeah.
Just a total freak about Quantum Leap. He loves Bakula. I think he's even watching the New Orleans NCIS because Bakula's on it.
So that means he was into Enterprise as well,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah, no, he's a Bakula nut.
Good for him.
But I still can't believe he hasn't watched Men of a Certain Age.
He'll get to it.
With him and Ray Romano and Andre Brower. That was I loved that show.
It was TNT, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
TNT, and I loved it because I was of that certain I kind of was that certain age, and all of the things that show was about, I was just experiencing in my 40s. So got Scott Bakula in Gung Ho. Scott Bakula as Hunt Stevenson in this short-lived series that first aired on ABC December 5th, 1986, and it lasted until June 27th, 1987. The setting was at an auto plant in Hadleyville, Pennsylvania, that had been reopened as sort of the Asan Motors, a Japanese-owned company. The comedy of the show was the clash of cultures faced by American workers and Japanese management. It's the series co-starred Getty Watanabe, who reprised his role from the movie, Stephen Lee, and Clint Howard. It was based on the feature film of the same name. Yeah. I don't remember the TV series, I gotta say. Let's see, here's Mike on WGN. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Nick, how you doing?
Good, good.
All right, Frank's Place with...
Tim Reed.
Tim Reed.
Yeah. That was a great show. That was a great show. Yeah.
CBS kept moving the time around.
Yeah. And it was kind of unusual because it was a really sophisticated show. It was about music, and it was unusual, but it was really intelligent and really funny and really well done.
Yeah.
I'd like to see that one. That's a good one. All right, Mike, thanks, buddy.
All right.
Have a good morning. 312-981-7200. How about Richard Tyson and John Ashton in Hardball? Veteran copy Charlie C.B. Battles, played by John. These names are fantastic. Played by John Ashton, gets a new partner, young and brash Joe Kaz Kazarowski, played by Richard Tyson. Of course, Kaz is the rebel. He plays by his own rules. This causes friction between Charlie and Kaz, as each has their own way of enforcing the law. Lasted 18 episodes from September of 89 to June of 90.
I didn't really like the reboot of it with Chris Matthews. Way different show.
Yeah, it was.
Not faithful to
All
the source material.
He yelled a lot. There was too much yelling. By the way, one of my favorite recurring impressions that Daryl Hammond did was when he did Hardball. You're watching Hardball. He was hilarious doing that.
Who did It's 2020 with Baba Wawa?
That's Gilda Radner.
Gilda Radner. Yeah, she was amazing.
Great Gilda Radner. Listen, you can't have a character named Kaz and it not be played by Ron Liebman. I don't think I've ever told you about the show Kaz and my obsession with it.
No.
Ron Liebman. Are you familiar with Ron Liebman?
I am not.
Ron Liebman, one of the greatest actors of all time, won a Tony for originating the role of Roy Cohn in Angels in America on Broadway. Won himself a Tony. TV actor, film actor, been in a bunch of stuff. You recognize him. Did you watch Friends?
Not really.
Okay, he was one of the Friends' fathers. I don't know which one. I think it was Jennifer. I think he played Jennifer Aniston's father. But Ron Liebman, character actor, he was in a show in the 70s called Kaz. And he played a convict. He goes to jail. His name is Kaczynski, and they call him Kaz. While he's in jail, he studies the law, comes out, becomes a lawyer, and that's what it's a law show. He's a lawyer. And it was the greatest show ever, Kaz.
Yeah, I do recognize his voice, though, because he was an Archer.
Oh, yes.
He played a character, Ron Cadillac.
Yeah, that's him. That's him. So Ron Liebman, who I adore Ron Liebman, who has done, he's won Tonys, he's done stage, he's done film, but, Kaz is the thing. Kaz is the thing. He was also in a movie called Super Cops, which was not the Jackie Chan movie, but he was in Super Cops, which was based on a true story about these guys in New York, and it's a really good movie.
Huh.
But anyway, Ron Liebman was in a show called Kaz, and I watched it all the time. I loved it. And so whenever I see the name Kaz, I'm like, no, you can't have that name.
It's not Ron Liebman.
Only Ron Liebman can have the name Kaz. And like six other people on the planet remember that show. Like nobody remembers. I think it was on for two seasons. And at that time, he was married to Linda Lavin. And so Kaz and Alice were both on the same night. So they owned CBS.
For a time?
For a time. It was the Ron Liebman, Linda Lavin years.
There's just, I wonder if it's on DVD.
It's not. I've tried. No. I think it's. I know that the opening credits and the theme song are on YouTube.
Okay.
Because whenever I mentioned Kaz in the past, Dan would always pull up the theme song for Kaz. So that's out there. And if anybody remembers Kaz, God bless you. Loved it. Oh my God. We incorporated that as a running joke in this play called Toast of the Town. And one of the actors was obsessed with Ron Liebman because of Kaz. One of the actors who were in this theater company that were putting up the show. And he would walk around with an 8x10 of Ron Liebman and go, "Oh, it's Kaz." There it is, Kaz. He also played drums.
That's a spectacularly jazzy theme.
Unbelievable. Bringing back all the memories of Kaz. He had very unorthodox methods, like most, you know, lawyer shows. But here's the thing. Because he was a thief, like he could, you know, like he was if I remember correctly, he was a defense attorney. So like if somebody, let's say somebody was accused of stealing a car, and he would go like, "Your Honor, I would like to take this moment to have a recess, and I'd like us to reconvene in the parking lot where I will show you how to hotwire a car and steal it." Because he was a criminal. So he would prove people's innocence by going out, breaking into cars and hotwiring, doing illegal stuff. "I'd like to take this time to prove to you that you can't counterfeit money in 15 minutes because I'm Kaz." It was the best show ever.
"Sir, I'd like to take you outside and show you that you cannot hit a target from 500 yards
That's
away.
That's exactly right.
With a Remington rifle."
I remember specifically the hotwiring thing. Where like they timed him on how long it took for him to break into a parked car and hotwire it, and it didn't coincide. And the guy got off, like the guy who was accused of stealing the car. They were like, "Oh no, it Kaz proved it."
Kaz, you're
good old Kaz, and he played in a jazz band when he wasn't in the court. He was at a jazz club.
"I'll allow it this time, playing Kaz, but yeah. Watch yourself.
Watch yourself, Kaz." Kaz, man, I'm telling you, it was the greatest show of all time.
You know, I gotta say, President Trump's got a great lead in here.
Yeah, Kaz.
Kaz.
That's right. Kaz talk. I'm sure that's gonna be a new feature. Every week on the show, we're gonna do Kaz talk. And nobody will know what the hell I'm talking about. Except for Ron Liebman. If Ron Liebman's listening, he's like, "Yeah, that's right, I was in Kaz." It was really funny because we included it in the show, and we repeated the gag so much. Every time we said Kaz, we repeated the gag so much that people started to laugh at it. And nobody in the audience knew what the hell Kaz was. No, everybody who came to that play had no idea what Kaz was. But we forced it down their throats. We forced that gag, the Kaz gag and the Ron Liebman gag, down their throats so much that by the end of the play, when we were doing more Kaz jokes, the audience was roaring with laughter.
Good old Kaz.
I was just trying to figure out. I would often wonder if anybody in the theater watching the play knew what the hell Kaz was, and I would wager to say that 95% of the people who saw that show had no idea what Kaz was. But we threw it in the play anyway. We didn't care because it's Kaz. All right. So anyway, this guy on Hardball, you can't call yourself Kaz. Oh, now here's a show that I really enjoyed. Robert Blake in Helltown. You know, Robert Blake was Beretta. You know Robert Blake from Robert Blake was in Lost Highway. He was the creepy pale-faced guy with the camera.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, that's Robert Blake. His best known series, though, of course, was Beretta, his best character. But he followed, he hadn't worked in a while. He's also best known for being accused of killing his wife. That's another,
yeah.
I totally forgot about that. Robert Blake was in Helltown. Robert Blake was Father Noah Hardstep Rivers, a priest at the St. Dominic's Parish in the tough East L.A. neighborhood. The series ran for 15, it was only on for 15 episodes? God, I just thought it was on longer because it was a good show. It was a really good show. The character was often thought of as Beretta in a priest's collar. The show was up against ABC's Dynasty. Oh.
You don't win against Dynasty.
There's no way you're going to beat Dynasty.
Or how did... Dynasty.
Dynasty. If you listen, any TV show that inspires Prince to use the title of that show in lyrics to one of his songs is a popular is an iconic TV show. You don't have to watch Dynasty to have an attitude. That's what Prince thinks. Blake began working on the concept of Helltown when he was working on Blood Feud in 1983. Blake took the idea for the series to ABC because he had done Beretta for them. They weren't interested, much to his disappointment. It also starred Whitman Mayo. Grady from Sanford and Son. Yeah, Natalie Court, Jeff Corey, and Tony Longo. Okay. All right, we're just about out of time. I'm going to save some more of these because some of these are priceless. And if they did one about the 70s, they would definitely include Kaz right at the top of the list. All right. Well, we did have time. We did finally have time. Macron, wow. Macron is speaking right now, and then the president comes up after him. Mm-hmm. We're live coverage. We'll go right to it when it happens, and you'll get a full news report from Vic coming up after 5 o'clock. Again, tomorrow, I hope you tune in. Herb Weissbaumer, Super Guy, all the Friday features, and a visit from the Brightside Theater to talk about Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.